good food. So, Honorable Vandale,
yes, Chairperson, two issues before we start. The one is about the agenda. In the past, or the previous agenda on our, the whole morning was supposed to be on the fisheries issues. But now I see it's only been moved for 2 hours on the fisheries issues. Those issues are very vast. There's so many problems there in those, in that sector. And I feel that this committee is not taking the fisheries issues seriously, because we are not spending time on that. And I feel that the time allocated for the fisheries issues is too little to cover it all. And it moved to the bottom of the agenda, which means that it will probably not even get to most of that time.
Honorable Vandale, I've tried to clarify the issue of the program with yourself in the previous meeting. Fishery, we're dealing with it every quarter. We get the report on fishery. But there are specific issues today we've allocated time for us to look at. We've been discussing fishery every quarter ourselves. There was no any stage that we have not dealt with fishery because it's part of the department. We receive the report on a quarterly basis. Even during the annual report, we have dealt with fishery. But we have allocated specific day today to deal with those issues which we have agreed that they must come to the meeting for us to get how far is the department on them. Because we are not going to pick up any gossip and bring it to this meeting. Those problems that we are raising, Honorable Vandale, we've been discussing. Department has been responding to issues and we have not reached a state of crisis ourselves here. So, and you should accept that the program of the committee is the management that deals with the issues, because every now we are guided. And I've been raising that you must tell your whips to allocate committees more time. It's not my problem. It's the problem of Parliament. And I must follow the structure of the program. So if they are not actually dealing with the issue of the program, cannot be the problem of the committee. We go there and talk about the motions which does not help our people there, sitting in Parliament for 7 hours without doing nothing important. Committee meetings, we have less hours. So it's not my problem. And we'll follow the program as it is. And Grain SA is a strategic partner in us reaching, securing food for our people. So we definitely need them into this meeting. Fortunately or unfortunate, ARC has given an apology, which will increase our time for discussion in fishery issues. So that is a fortunate part of it, but you must know that it's not my time. I'm given time by the chair of the parliament, give me time to check, to schedule the meeting. So you have to bear with me. There's nothing that I can do with your concern, Honorable Member. Thank you. And an Honorable Vandale, can discuss that after the meeting because you are wasting my time.
Chairperson, I said there was two issues I wanted to start with, and the other issue was the last oversight visit that we had. I just want to have it minuted that I'm concerned about the way that the organization is done at these oversight meetings or the public hearing that we went on to the Western Cape at Knysna. You know about the problems that are there, and I want it minuted that I'm very unhappy about it.
Thanks, Honorable, for raising your own concern, because I don't know what's your issue, and we'll note it, and at the right time, you can then have an opportunity to raise it. Can we focus on the agenda? I've noted your concern, Honorable Member. Grain SA, welcome to the meeting. We have invited you to come and share with ourselves how far are we in terms of stabilizing our country, in terms of production of maize in the country. And we know that we had the challenge of fall armyworm last season, and we just wanted to check your readiness for this planting season. We know that already you have started in September in other areas. Unfortunately, our program does not tally very well with the strategic partners that we have in terms of their program. So sometimes we call you later. We're supposed to have called you earlier, so that if there are any impediments that you wanted us to, for our intervention, we could be able to do that when it's still in time. And we want to apologize for calling you very late, late, you know, but we believe we're still in time for any things that can meet us. Minister, and you are welcome. I saw the PM, but I just see somebody with you, and I thought it was PM. Okay. Oh, it's looking like PM. Okay. You're welcome, Minister. And, madam, you can introduce yourself and your team.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Good morning, Minister, DG. Myself, Miranda Visser, and I'm responsible for grain research and the policy center at Grain South Africa. Next to me is my colleague, Pietro Fourie, and she's a production analyst and economist at Grain South Africa. I'm not sure if everybody's able to see on this big screen over there. Okay. Thank you. What we're going to discuss with you today is, as the Honourable Chair introduced already, what's the state of readiness, where are we in the current planting season, and what has been the impact of fall armyworm so far in the country. I thought I'll start with a little bit of perspective as to the bigger maize production zone and the grains and oil seeds grown in South Africa. And when we look at that particular graph, we can see that 59% of our crop, grain crop, is the hectares taken up by yellow maize and white maize, and the rest is split between soybean, that's growing every year exponentially, wheat, and sunflower. This particular slide is very important to us because if we can look at the last two bars on that particular slide, the 2016-17 production year, we produced the biggest crop that this country has ever seen, 16 million tons of maize. And that came after two seasons of drought, where the average was 7 million tons, and it shot up all the way to 16.7 million tons. That attests to the type of producer on the ground and that we are capable of producing food for South Africa. What that also tells us is that in terms of our technologies on the ground, whether it's our one-hectare farmers and whether it's our 1,000-hectare farmers, they all make use of the same technology, whether it's in seed, whether it's production practices like conservation agriculture. It's one of the things we're driving towards and driving a very strong need to get all our producers to that level. So South Africa is capable of producing its own crop, and that also means that we most years are a net exporter of white maize and yellow maize. This particular year, and I'll speak to the challenges a little bit later, But in most instances, we are capable of producing enough maize if weather permitted. And for the last season, the weather was good. Currently, the weather also looks very good and optimal. In terms of a provincial breakdown as to where yellow maize and white maize comes from, the province that's probably the most important in terms of maize production is the Free State province, both for white maize as well as yellow maize. Northwest is very important in terms of white maize production, and Mpumalanga is extremely important for our feed industry because of the yellow maize produced in that province, the majority of it. All the other provinces makes up a smaller percentage of what they contribute to the annual 59% of maize production. But with all good things, there's a couple of negatives also, and these negatives are carried by producers, whether they're small or whether they're big. And one of the biggest ones that we're concerned about is the rise in input cost. And how, if you look at that particular graph, over the last 15 years, input cost, and if we look at the main input cost, fertilizer cost, fuel cost, chemicals, seed, and repairs on machinery for producers has shot up by 370% in 15 years. The biggest component of that is fertilizer and the cost of fertilizer to the South African grain producer. Some of these fertilizers we do produce locally in South Africa, but they're still very expensive for the average producer. Another important factor that we are always looking out for, and if you look at that particular graph, and if you look at the month, as the Honorable Chair referred to, the planting season has kicked off. So October, November, December, those are the months that we're worried about, as what is the weather forecasting look like. And what we see on that graph, it is very favorable. We're expecting La Nina conditions, which is over and above rainfall, which is good for planting. Another critical stage, again, is during January, February, March, when most of the young grain crop goes into germination. And there you also want above average rainfalls, and it so far looks good based on the weather forecasting. So for the summer production region, weather permitting, climate permitting, it looks like another good year on record. What will strain producers is input cost that is continually rising, and input cost in particular, seed, and the cost of seed to a farmer is escalating at a rate that is just going out of control. And we, and with our colleagues at DAF, we are looking into that particular issue as to how we can do something and from government side perhaps assist and perhaps in a policy directive in terms of seed and the cost of seed to the South African producer. Most of our seed technologies comes from other countries, from multinationals, and we don't control the pricing of that as such. This particular graph shows to us clearly how, because of the surpluses that we face now with in terms of white maize in particular, you can see how the suffix price for maize has fallen. If you look at what super maize and special maize cost on the shelf, you would see there's a gradual decline in the processed product, but not as steep as it is in terms of the suffix price. And The Economist explains this very well and saying it's always a sticky situation. Prices goes down very fast, but when they rise faster than they're going down. So there you can see it clearly. If we talk wheat for a minute, it's not as rosy it is for the summer grains. Wheat being a winter grain, South Africa is a net importer of wheat, and we have been in this state for a long time. And there's many different reasons. Climate is one, input cost is another. Of course, genetics is a huge part to play. And we have been importing what we need every year for this country, which is not good for our current account and for the country as a whole. So in terms of wheat production, we are not food secure because we import so much, and it costs a great deal of money to import all that wheat into South Africa. Of course, the Western Cape currently is going through the worst drought in 93 years, so it does not add and it doesn't look and it does not bode well for the wheat industry. A great deal of interventions is needed for wheat industry and to turn around this particular situation. On this particular slide, I just want to share with you, as I've done with the maize price, what is the product of bread, a loaf of bread, I think it consists of 22 or 23 slices. And on this particular slide, what we've tried to show is the raw commodity, the wheat, what does it contribute to the final loaf of bread? Very little, 3 rands, which is 16% to 17% on that particular season that we've done that slide. The rest of the cost that goes into the price of a loaf of bread is actually in the agro and the value chain within the milling and the baking sector. And that contributes, and thus the next slide will look a little bit different to the maize one, where you see the decline is gradual for both. On this particular one, if you look at the suffix price, the price has fallen. However, the bread price for both brown bread and white bread stays marginally high, and it's because of that big difference between what the actual raw commodity contributes and the other costs taken up within the value chain, which is on the baking and milling side. Honorable Chair, overall, maize production, summer grains looks good, favorable climate, farmers will plant. Yes, they are constrained, but all things aside, farming will continue, and summer grains looks good for this current season. We are looking into export markets because we're sitting on a 4 million ton surplus for white maize, and we know within South Africa and the African market is the only buyers of white maize because it's a staple for all of us. The rest of the world does not use white maize so much, a little bit in Mexico. Yellow maize is the exporter and has export potential, and we're continuously looking for new markets, and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is assisting us finding alternative markets for the surplus, because if we don't find a market for the surplus white maize, prices will erode further, and that does not spell good for producers because they will at one stage just fall out of the farming and go bankrupt. If I can quickly switch to crop biosecurity, we have had this past planting season a huge outbreak of fall armyworm, which is a quarantine pest for South Africa. There has been a great deal of work done. Industry from ourselves, the seed industry, has joined forces with DAF to make sure that we investigate and start to manage this particular problem. However, of a bigger concern is crop biosecurity. We all are aware what is currently happening in the poultry industry, the biosecurity needs on that end. Similar things can happen on the crop biosecurity side, and we always need to be vigilant. And in order to be vigilant, we need information, and we need information sharing amongst the different African countries. We have seen with fall armyworm, some countries within the region has had the problem as early as 2015, 2014. It went unreported because all countries, most African countries, are partners to the IPPC, which makes it legal to report any new outbreaks of diseases. Fall armyworm was not reported by any African country, and it remains unofficially unreported as far as the IPPC portal, which makes it very difficult for us sitting on the southern tip of Africa, because most diseases came from up in the west or the east and moved towards South Africa. The other big one that we are worried about as an industry is maize lethal necrosis. It's not currently here. It has moved from Kenya, East Africa, all the way down to Tanzania, and we are following that movement very closely, because MLN is 10 times worse than fall armyworm. But again, with DAF, we are following this up, and we're constantly working with them to change import conditions, regulations, to make sure that we're safe and South African grain crops are protected. If I can focus quickly on fall armyworm, we have started several work this past season, industry, government, seed companies, chemical companies. We got a committee going. Every Wednesday we meet at the offices of DAF, where we sit through and deal with the different issues affecting us. What is worrying is that fall armyworm is spreading across the globe. It's not just an African problem. It's an American problem, a South American problem. It's everywhere. And what makes this pest particularly dangerous is the host range is ever widening. We know the Americans are currently having this particular pest on wheat. We're having the pest on cover crops. So the host range is ever increasing. We are worried for the Western Cape in particular because of the 9 provinces in South Africa, it's the only province where it's not officially reported yet. It's in all our 8 provinces. We know Namibia has got continuous problems with fall armyworm, but none of these countries have officially reported this. So it makes, again, cooperation within the region very difficult. In terms of what industry have done with government so far, is set up a surveillance program where we're doing surveillance work in the 9 provinces. Industry has made contributions to the state to make sure the surveillance program kicks off and it's running. What we would hope to see in the future is for provincial provinces, grain-producing provinces, to make perhaps a contribution to these efforts so that we can together combat and manage this particular pest. Industry, in particular the Maize Trust, is funding research work done and conducted by the ARC and the Northwest University currently. We are trying to improve our diagnostic capacity, and I know DAF is busy with a damage assessment, official damage assessment report, so that in future we are capable of assessing the damages incurred so that producers can claim back from the different insurances. Also as part of the research activities is to come up with an integrated pest management plan. In some of these provinces, fall armyworm will become established. In some provinces, we will try to eradicate it. And those sort of efforts are currently undergoing. We are also testing to see what's the tolerance of GMO technologies and GMO seeds within South Africa towards fall armyworm. And until such scientific knowledge is out, we cannot go out there and claim that GM crops are better protected against fall armyworm. So in all our efforts with government is working well, Honorable Chair. We are trying now with an early warning system to ensure that pest monitoring on farm level is as secure and that we inform each other as soon as a new outbreak or the pest is detected somewhere else, and we do that through crop imaging. That is just a slide illustrating where else in the country is the surveillance work going on. We have just completed the Western Cape surveillance program. That's work in Limpopo where the problem started. Eastern Cape, parts of KwaZulu-Natal, and everywhere else in the country. In conclusion, what we are trying to get from this, and we are very optimistic that the working groups that we currently have looking at fall armyworm can be extended in future to make sure that we look at biosecurity of grains, not just fall armyworm, but we need to have risk assessments of all the other pests and diseases that on our horizon is entering South Africa. We need to sharpen up on our pest surveillance, and the partnership between government and industry is working really, really well so far. The information sharing that's happening, it's going really well. We need increasing work and updating of pest risk assessments from the department side to assist the grain industry so that we can be on top of all the issues at all times and be prepared. And in terms of long term, we want to see South Africa as the new SADC chair to please assist with the cooperation and reporting within the region on the outbreak of diseases, because it's good for all of us. Otherwise, we will all be caught off guard, and that's not good for anyone's food security. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well done, Green SA. Last year when we met, we were very worried that we might go back to a situation where we eat yellow maize, yellow porridge because of the drought that we have, and we are very happy that you have emerged very strong after that that severe drought that has affected all our farmers, and thank you very much for that. I think you should convey our great appreciation to the leadership of Grain SA, that we appreciate the work that has been done. Honorable members, that was the presentation from Grain SA. Members are invited to interact with the presentation. Honorable Spain.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I need to echo your sentiments regarding giving our thanks and saying we are grateful that I think the situation was turned around in this year, and I think we also need to congratulate our farmers for planting in faith. I think, you know, sometimes if you are coming through two difficult and in certain cases three difficult years, it's difficult if you have a big, big loan in the bank and then still go out and plant, so I think we need to thank them. Chairperson, I just want to, on that, ask a question, and I haven't asked any of the farmers beforehand. But looking at this, one of the negative effects of having such a big crop is the maize price, obviously. And in the past, I knew exactly how much it cost or how much a farmer could make if the maize price is at a certain level and looking at the input cost. Can you give us some kind of an indication of how much a farmer would make on a hectare, on average? I know you're always very technical and work things out to the cent. Does the farmers make money this year with the input cost and then the low maize price? What would you think is the best, I would almost say, situation that we can get? Because obviously for food security, it's very good to have such a big crop. How many tons do you think South Africa needs to produce for the farmers also to make money? It's a difficult question because you almost have to say to farmers, don't plant more because then, you know, you're not going to make it. I'm not making myself clear here, but the point is we are worried if it's dry and farmers don't produce, but those farmers that did produce actually made a lot of money during the time. But this year, farmers actually didn't make money. So we could have a reverse situation from what we had in the past, that even if they have a very, very high crop, they actually don't have an income this year. Where last year, during the drought, people that did have a crop made an income. So I'm not, you know, if you can give me some kind of idea, what would be the best tons that we have to have in South Africa for farmers to still then make money and to ensure that we have food security and not getting into that situation. I would like to also ask on the input costs, rising input costs, whether there's anything that could be done to look at the rising input costs, because I think at the end of the day that will be the best. We don't want farmers to tell farmers to say don't plant more because we want the food security, but if you can't make money if you plant, we have to look at maybe the input costs. So do you have anything to say that we can look at regarding input costs? Then on that other thing, the maize lethal necrosis, I hear your concerns and I also hear your requests to look into the surveillance teams. Can you just tell me at the moment what practically happens regarding surveillance? Who is doing what? Because that was one of my concerns from the beginning, and the minister will remember as soon as we got the full army whim in the country, I was saying, so what did we do beforehand? What is on the ground happening currently to look at full army whim and other pests in practice? Thank you very much, Chen.
Thank you. I think, you see, Honourable members, when I'm inviting you to speak, to raise questions, you don't raise hands. And I assume that is the only one person, and I allow member to say whatever he says because we are managing time. Please, when we request that, you must show so that we are able to balance time. Honourable Maloyi and Honourable Kapp and Honourable Mandela and Honourable Mapang.
Judge, my questions are almost related. The input cost, the wheat, and so on. And in both instances, we have said you need a government intervention. What type of an intervention are you talking about? The second question is on the MLN. Have you interacted with the department? Are you together with the department having plans in case we are attacked by this MLN in South Africa? Are there practical plans for it instead of just saying it is now in Kenya, it is now in Zambia, it is now... Do we have plans in place in South Africa in case we are attacked? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. One is on the area of the percentage of contribution of provinces. I just wanted to relate the low percentage of the Eastern Cape, 1% and 0% in average, to relate this with the highest hectareage of Eastern Cape being ready for planting. How to relate that? And then secondly, is this area of continual conclusion. There are these elements of the negative ones, the risk, lack of regional cooperation, African is not reporting, and so on. And then what is, how are you assisting maybe the minister to have it, or the executive to handle this issue of these other countries who are not contributing? Thank you.
Honorable Mandela.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also wish to express sincere appreciation for the presentation, ma'am. I must just indicate, Chair, I visited a farm in just next to Ilum in Cape Agulhas, a riverside farm, and I was very much impressed arriving at the farm, and there's training happening, organized, facilitated, and presented by Grain SA, Chair. I must say, with a number of farm workers in attendance of the training, and it's last month when I went there, Chair. Chair, I wanted to, Honorable Kapa, have raised this question about the low percentage of production in the Eastern Cape. The Western Cape is virtually the same, and I wanted to know where it has to do with the weather patterns, etc., Chair, that there is such a low production in these provinces. Indeed, it seems like the Free State is, in actual fact, the biggest supplier, producer of grains at this point in time. Chair, I am also, and I would request presenter just to somehow remove the cloud in my mind, interpreting slide, I think it's the third slide, that looks at the maize production versus consumption, as well as, I'm not quite sure whether what slide is this, but it also look at wheat production, the consumptions are quite different, Chair. In the one slide, the consumption is much less than the crop estimate. And in the other one, consumption is much, much higher. If one looks at 17, 18, it's much higher than the estimated crop. So it's just a bit of reverse on the two slides. Chair, that's a little bit of confusion for myself. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Matra, you're covered. Okay. One welcomes the collaboration between the department and yourselves, and you know, when there is good collaboration, there is good outcome, and we want to encourage that it should continue. Just to on the biosecurity for grain, as Honorable Stein or Malu, they phrase it, have we made in terms of the the sector analyze and come up with the strategy, because I think if we have strategy, we can be able to get treasury to contribute, because it's important that we should actually be ahead of the situation. We should not talk about now drought only. We must just talk about the climate change as food. But you need to develop strategy and adoption plans and your mitigation plans. So do we as a sector already have that? If we have that, how did you process it to the department so that there is a international organization besides our fiscals which can actually contribute in assisting in dealing with those issues? Just to check on that one. The second issue is on the drought resistant maize. You're saying the research is still continuing, but the report that we received as a portfolio committee in the previous, in your presence, you are agreeing that it can help smallholder farmers to raise the outcomes. So today you are talking about there is still on the research. So what is it that needs to be done so such that all of us will have the common understanding of this drought resistant maize? Because if the farmers themselves, they are not sure of it even today, then it becomes a problem. I want to agree with you with the in the last meeting, because you see, my interest is that this meeting is not just for the meeting's sake, for the meeting and knowing one another. When we raise issues, that means we need to follow up. We expect to have a feedback that in the last meeting we said that Grain SA, we hear you that there is a lack of contribution on our on wheat. So, and there was, you said that you're mobilizing more farmers to go into that direction, and the percentage has not grown, including the issue of Eastern Cape. I think instead of responding to that question as raised by Honorable Staff, we must get a feedback, because we were told by yourself that you are working with the Eastern Cape because of Mpumalanga being affected by the mines. You are moving to the Eastern Cape, and there is that process that you have engaged yourself with the traditional leaders and all everybody in Eastern Cape for them to relocate some of the hectares that you have lost in Mpumalanga in Eastern Cape, because Eastern Cape is, your research told you that is a very good province to produce maize. If we can get the feedback on that instead of asking the same question that we asked last year. I know Honorable Trapper was not part of us, but there was that decision that they are moving towards Eastern Cape and all those things. So if we can just get feedback on that. And we appreciate the indication on the weather forecast. Very encouraging, and we hope that we'll double the numbers. So for this year is to produce and we must appreciate the support that Grain SA is giving to the smallholder farmers. I think the partnership should continue, and I think it must be structured, Minister, such that you are able to contribute as government together with Grain SA, the support that they give to smallholder farmers. But I think as we celebrate the production itself, we should never forget those that are making that production, the farm workers, the life of the farm workers in the farms. Because if we don't maintain that good relationship and move towards, and the other challenges that the country has adopted the minimum wage, so are we going to be able to cope? Do we have plans to look towards that so that we are able to stabilize the sector such that we don't realize the problem at the time when it's supposed to be implemented? So those are the questions you can respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll respond from the last questions and work our way up towards the first question. The issue around, I hear your concern, and that Grain South Africa is currently our farmer development program, and the CEO from his office are running a special project on the Eastern Cape because there's a great deal of issues in terms of infrastructure that needs to be dealt with, and I know there's continuous work on that front because we all know the Eastern Cape is, in terms of potential for agricultural production for grains in the future. As some provinces becomes drier and drier, the eastern seaboard of South Africa will be the places to be to produce more grains. So there's continuous work on that front. But I will take this request back for a formal report back to the portfolio committee. On the aspect of a drought resistance, I was referring in my particular presentation today on what is there has been some noise made about GM traits and that GM maize, the seed, has some sort of built-in tolerance towards fall armyworm. And that was, I was referring to that particular aspect, that needs to be scientifically first confirmed before we can make such pronouncements. And there's currently work at Northwest University in that regard. Also, some of the seed technologies that farmers already use, small farmers, big farmers, all producers, there is built-in drought tolerance in most of our varieties already out there. Yes, there's special emphasis on projects being run currently where drought resilience and all sorts of other tolerances are looked at, and I know the ARC is running a special program on that particular front. So the ones that I was referring to was really just GM traits and tolerance to the pest armyworm. In terms of the issue around DST, the wheat, and why the interventions and what sorts of interventions is out there for wheat, we have started with industry 5 years ago a turnaround strategy for wheat production in South Africa because wheat production in the Free State has gone to a point where it was absolute minimum and most of our wheat comes from the Western Cape currently. In this 5 years, a great deal of things have happened with intervention in the state. The state was involved, DTI assisted, DAF assisted, DST assisted, in different forms. DTI in terms of tariffs and applications for tariffs, DAF in terms of policies that needed to put in place, and from DST side, there was a great deal of contributions made to the existing research programs within industry, to such extent that we next week are launching the wheat breeding program with the Minister of Naledi Pando at the University of Stellenbosch. Because of the successes of the last 5 years and how we're trying to get resilient, climate resilient, drought tolerant, higher yielding weed varieties in South Africa, because that's what we're after. The technologies that's available, high yielding varieties in maize, are not available to a wheat farmer, because wheat is an open pollinated crop. No private breeder invests in that sort of crops, because farmers retain seed and they don't see an investment. So we as industries decided to do something about that, and that is really bearing very positive fruits for us. In terms of the question of MLN and what is DAF doing about it, we have started, like I said, we have a small group of the fall armyworm. We have learned our lessons, and from that experiences, what we're trying to do now is put together a group that sits regular and talk to some of the threats that's posed to the grain industry. And together we're trying to address them. DAF came to the party and took the initiative to adapt and change the import conditions for maize. How we bring maize seed and maize from other parts of the continent or even other parts of the world where we know MLN is a problem. Those sort of import conditions and permits had to be changed, and DAF came to the party and they've done that. In terms of input costs and the high rise, and like I've mentioned earlier, 370% jump, for us as producer organizations, it's really to look at what farmers pay for seed and fertilizer. And our small farmers pay the same prices as the big farmers are paying, so it is really a great concern for us. And we thought one of the things, for instance, if I can make an example of phosphates that's produced in South Africa. South African producers don't get special prices. They still pay against import parity prices for something that's produced in the country by Foscorp. That's a concern. In terms of seed, most of our maize seed is produced by multinationals from outside South Africa. And those prices are linked with all sorts of other dollar prices and all sorts of other things. So there's absolutely, we need some sort of policy directive or some space where we can discuss. And we're having those discussions with DAF to look at the prices of seed, especially the price of maize seed. It's a beautiful crop to produce because we have access to the technologies, but it's just costing too much. And Honorable Stein, Pietro will answer the last part of your question dealing with if farmers are making actually money now.
Thank you. Honorable Stein, to give you a little bit of background, you say that nobody actually mentioned the numbers and so on. But if we look, for example, in the Northwest province, we can say that the estimation of input cost is approximately, the direct cost is approximately 7,000 Rand. If you include all aspects, well, that's the direct cost. If you go more to Mpumalanga region, that's even more than 10,000 Rand. And that's even excluding the fixed cost. Of course, you can't do your calculations without a fixed cost. If that is added, a producer actually, if we can say figures, it will not be profitable. For this season which lies ahead, and specifically with the surplus which we have, prices for next season during when they are harvesting, it is almost suffix price, it's 2,000 Rand approximately. So if you the producer price is between 1,700 and 1,800. So definitely for the season which lies ahead, it seems like producers in general is not making money. But that's the concerns we are faced with a constant increase in the input cost. And if you look to the same extent, it's actually that the price hasn't increased with the same trend, of course. So producers are faced with a challenge that they need to become more effective, more efficient. They have to look at alternative type of crops. So the expectations also for the season is that to bring everything more into balance due to the surplus which we have, and that we will, the estimates that the crop estimates figures are going to be released in a, and I think in next week's time also, but then we can see also a shift, for example, more to sunflower and soybeans. So there's a lot of challenges in terms of that. Thank you.
thank you very much for the response. Honorable members, do you have, can accommodate one to two questions and last two questions, not clarify. Honorable Stein and Honorable Carter.
Chairperson, yes, I want to thank them for the comprehensive answers. I would like to maybe not now, but in writing, to explain to us the difference between the Northwest cost of 7,000 and then Mpumalanga 10,000, and maybe of small scale farmers, because I think we need to look at that. Everyone gets the same price at the end of the day, and I know in this portfolio it's Chairperson, and when we go on oversight, you know, we have these discussions when we say, oh, but farmers can store the maize in silos and wait for the right price and whatever. But even between commercial farmers, there's a disparity in price. Because of, if you look at input cost Northwest, 7,000 and for Langa, 10,000, it's a massive difference in price. So maybe for us as a portfolio, it's something that we can look at in future, so that we can see how can we help farmers. I'm thinking about the Eastern Cape. If we want to produce more in the Eastern Cape, but maybe it even costs more to produce, you know, the input cost in the Eastern Cape. Let's look at that and see if we can get some kind of idea of what it is that the farmers struggle with. Because the last thing we want is for farmers to start producing more because they can't make money, and then we sit with a crisis even if we don't have a drought.
Thank you, Chair. It's on that one when I was asking if maybe there's an effort of trust, of maybe empowering the executive or the minister to intervene or assist in this area of no legal contribution by other countries in this issue of the armyworm. And also having that, getting hope of that mention of the word eradication, and want to see if there's hope for that part. Thank you.
Minister, you can't ask questions. You be responding because we expected you to meet with your team.
Yes.
So allow us to raise questions as you will come and be the last to close the discussion. I think I want to pick up what Honorable Stein has raised. We've raised it in the last interaction, if Honorable Members remember that this thing of pricing and cost is a problem generally. So it's important for the sector itself to start that debate and see how we can contribute in standardizing various areas and even including the all our sectors. Because, you know, if you go to other areas, as Honorable Stein is saying, the price goes up and in other areas goes down. I think there is that discussion. We need that discussion. But and we should then have a research. I think we can, the Grain SA, the department can start that. The research in terms of what makes this disparities, because that is where we can get the answer. What makes these disparities and in terms of this high cost, if we have to intervene, what then, which legislation should be tightened up and all those things, so that we discuss from the point of information and we're able to make impact in the process. So I just wanted to pick up on that, and the issue of biosecurity. I think we've discussed with the department. At some point, we might want to get the whole picture of the adaptation and the mitigation strategies that they've put in place, and would want them before they come to us. They should have actually bounced with the sector's stakeholders, so that when we deal with that, it should then be in, have been informed by the farmers themselves. So those are the two inputs that I wanted to raise, and you can respond or add, and then the minister will close the discussion.
Thank you.
Let me welcome DM. DM, you're welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Perhaps just I've taken note of all this, so we will go back and definitely compile a decent document with the pricing and costing and the disparities between the different production regions, and also on the biosecurity issue. I've taken note of that. On the issue on eradication and fall armyworm in other African countries, we do look to DAF to assist them in that regard, because we will, as industry, work with them, but there we want them to help us to get that communication through, and that to increase and make communication between the different countries better through South Africa as the chair of SADC now. That will take us a long way. In terms of eradication, I think it's too early to talk of eradication. We are currently talking, we would love to get to eradication. In some provinces, this particular pest will become established, and then it needs to be managed. And some of the provinces, it can be eradicated, but then we, our actions needs to be on top of it, and we need to respond very fast. But we are hopeful.
Thanks, Chairperson. We didn't want to interfere with the process, but I wanted just to explain one thing, that we have been working very well with SAA, the University of Northwest, and our own scientific institute, as well as with ARC. We have done. Remember when fall armyworm struck us in February last year? We didn't know what it was. It was the first time we have, intercepted it. But we're very quick to understand it, as well as to come up with different pesticides, register them. And I can say that this process is ongoing. But we have already, South Africa has been appointed by SADC to lead the work on fall armyworm. And we are already planning, and already the question as to what form is used. The early warning system is not only limited to South Africa, it's also extending beyond our borders. And when we speak of transboundary pests and diseases, it is expanded. We are already working to ensure that we are not found in the same situation we are in. Yes, the issue of countries, neighboring countries, not notifying others of different pests and diseases has been a problem, but it's something that we are working on, and we appreciate the cooperation of the stakeholders, which applies to all diseases. There's no way government on its own can win battle, but when we work together to share expertise and we're able to be able to reduce the impact, and whether we can eradicate as well, it is informed, because we don't want to. The usage of these pesticides is also having health concerns, that people must use it as per the prescriptions that are given by the producers, so that we don't end up with residues that can have problems. But we believe that farmers will, because one other area I think is affecting small-scale farmers is the issue of storage capacity, that after good harvest, they sell their maize when the prices are very low, and as a result, they don't get, they don't make money. Yes, there are programs between government and Grain SA, between the Department of Rural Development, already on one hectare, they are working together, and we hope that is going to spread to different areas. Thanks, Chairperson.
Minister, so the mandate that we had on the South Africa has been appointed as the chair of SADC for fall armyworms, that we must escalate to biosecurity in general. So that extend your mandate and so that with money that are meant to assist to deal with the climate change, we are able to access it as a sector and stabilize our sector. Thank you very much, Green SA. We are very delighted that you've come to this meeting and give us the good news. That's what we want, that our people will not starve. So the only thing that we must fight for now is the price. I'm told the 80 kg is more than towards 300 rand. So it's something that we'll discuss in the future and see how we balance these things. Thank you very much. We have invited ARC. They've given apology that will come at a later stage on the on the weather forecast. We're happy that already they've interacted with the sectors, including the weather bureau from DIA. So we are very happy about it. So we will have in our agenda at some point interact with ARC just to see that just to get briefings in terms of their research on weather, on climate change around the issues of sectors. We now have get the department to brief us on the. We must remember, honourable members, we had during the previous when we come in as a portfolio committee, we came in where there is a Harrison report that was produced by the previous administration, and we have been interacting with the department to get the Harrison report to be implemented, which has produced the M. Ambassade report. And we then request the department to come and brief us on the on the M. Ambassade report, how they are implementing it and what are the challenges. But we said that we should actually get briefings in terms of the 2020 commercial allocation, fish and rice, so that we know whether the 2020 preparation does take the issues of radical transformation agenda inside the process, and how our small scale fisheries have been empowered, and of course the other issues that will want to get clarity on the aquaculture development and the marine protection governance in the context of Operation Pakisa. So we will now invite you, Minister and your team, to brief us. So if you can shorten the presentation, give us information, but don't go halalala, it's our time for questions and discussion.
present now.
Minister, Minister.
You guys want to present? I'm going to present fisheries. I'm sure Mr. Van Dalen is going to be happy.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks to members, honourable members of this committee. Thanks, DM. We will start with the Among Basati report, which will outline the process that Chairperson referred to. That after the report of the Harrison report that outlines the processes after the FRAP 2013, we were compelled then to commission this team to go and find out what could have happened, but go beyond that by proposing remedial actions that led to the recent allocations. And I will give to the team to present the report, and that outlines the different aspects, including the small-scale fisheries, the issue of the ocean governance, and I'm sure the team will outline those. But I would like to say to the honorable committee members that the issue of the recent allocations in which there have been grievances is due to another process of appeals. And we are not therefore at liberty to say what those appeals will culminate in, because the appeals have got their own processes. I will give to the DDG Fisheries and whoever she will appoint to assist. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Minister. Morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, Minister, DM, Acting DG and colleagues. Honourable Chair, you have alluded to the background of this, and I will therefore not spend much time so that we keep time for the discussion and questions and clarity. I would like also to emphasize, Honourable Chair, that on October 2015, there's a detailed presentation that was submitted to the Portfolio Committee that was outlining the findings of the Harrison report, and we had subsequently provided the committee with the extensive report itself, both of the Harris and the report of the Among Basati. So I will quickly rush through this presentation. In terms of the history of the issue that brought about the reason or the inquiry related to the allocations that were done in 2013, and there were 8 sectors that were allocated in 2013 during the allocation process, and those are the 8 sectors. And perhaps of importance to note is that some of those sectors, actually all of those 8 sectors, are due for allocation in 2020, and a couple of them are of interest to small scale, but Asanda will talk about that when he makes a presentation on the small scale part. There was a controversy around the allocation of fishing rights, and perhaps one would say controversy around allocation of fishing rights may never go away, because it's a competitive process. Other people become successful, others don't become successful. So it is always a process that is always of interest to people. And sometimes when people are not yet clear about what has taken place, so there were issues that related to some controversy and allegations and perceptions around irregularities, manipulation,
arbitrary decision making and unprocedural conduct at that time. And then it was even made worse that there was a court or a court application that was brought by the Lionfish Association that has hence suspended the fishery at the time. And as you've indicated, Honorable Chairperson, the then minister approached this company to do this investigation. The rights in the 2015-16 allocation, there were 9 sectors that were allocated, and those are the sectors. I'm not going to go through them for the interest of time. And these, what happened was that when Emang Basadi report emanated from finding corrective measures, there were 3 things that needed to be ascertained: whether the department was ready to allocate the fishing rights of 15 and 16 financial year, and whether we could be able to prevent and put corrective measures to address the shortcomings that were identified in these 2 reports in preparation for the new allocation with which we have just concluded. And the third one was to advise Minister on how to deal with the appeals, and these are on slide 17 and until 19. I'm not going to be wasting time. There were a lot of findings that were identified in the Harris report, and to summarize them, there were 17 issues. If you look on those issues from the 1st to the 17th, a bulk of those are process issues. So the issue was around the process, how the process was undertaken. A few of those, number 11 and number 4, were issues relating to policy. Number 1, number 4, and number 11, issues relating to policy. And I'm just going to quickly run through the Harris report, what the findings are, and the status of whether we have implemented those when we were doing the rights allocation of 2015-16. On the validity of the policies, it was recommended by the Harris report that the issue of the policy consultations should be made as wide as possible so that people are afforded opportunity to make comments on the policies. This was implemented, Honorable Chairperson, and we can provide the committee with the report of PricewaterhouseCoopers because we appointed them to audit the process from the beginning until the end, because we wanted to make sure that we are not only telling the committee that we have implemented this, but we needed to find an independent body that was going to oversee the process and ensure that everything was proper. The issue around the validity of the policies, as the report of Harrison talks to the issue of national policy and the powers of the minister in determining fisheries sector policies. Now, there was a confusion or there was an allegation that the sector-specific policies are national policies and they needed to be approved by Cabinet before they can be implemented. And Harris disputes this fact that these are not national policies. They don't need to be approved by Cabinet. These are just administrative policies that flow out of the administrative powers endorsed to the minister by the statute. So, but the issue of public consultations and wide consultation was implemented. The second one relates to the issue of the delegation of authority, whereby it is requested that we should seek counsel if we are going to depart from the policies. Now, on the findings of the Harrison report, it was such that the policies themselves that were used for the allocation, they were never followed. The allocation took a different direction. But the issue is that Harrison as well is saying it is possible to deviate from policy, but you need to find a legal opinion if you are going to deviate, and we did not deviate. And where we thought we were deviating, we have sought 5 legal opinions, which also we can provide to the committee, and Johan Duval was providing these legal opinions where we sought and we thought they are needed. The third one was relating to the future process in developing the application forms. So the issue here was that the application forms did not talk to what we wanted to find out. For instance, you want to know the number of jobs that a particular applicant has created. So the application forms in 2013 did not have a space to ask you, did you create jobs, how many jobs? So if, for instance, you wanted to know the BEE profile of the company, though that kind of information was not provided for in the application form. So that issue was relating that to the fact that look at your policies.
look at the information you want to get out of it and then design your application form so that the two talk to each other, and this issue was implemented. The fourth relates to the issue where minister at the time did not consult the Minister of Finance for the determination of the fees. Actually, in the rights allocation of 2013, there was no application fee at all that was charged, and that brought a huge burden, financial burden, to the department. And Harris was saying, you should charge an application form, and the minister needs to consult with the Minister of Finance so that there is a determination of how much the application fee must be. And he is clear in his opinion that the amount that is charged for the application form must translate to it covering the administrative cost the department is going to carry to ensure that government does not end up subsidizing the process. And that process was done. We sought a minister's approval and the Minister of Finance approval. The fifth one relates to the issue of the determination between the total allowable catch or the total allowable effort. What the complaint was that the delegated authority, which is the DDG, cannot make a determination of the total allowable catch. Interesting is that, as we say there, we did not implement this because we sought another opinion, and we got a senior council opinion from Atlanta and Power. And they confirmed, together with the department, that it cannot be that the minister should decide on the total allowable catch, because minister becomes the appellant authority. So it is not possible that if he still has to deal with the appeals, then he had determined the total allowable catches. Otherwise, he is left with no room to deal with the appeals. The sixth was relating to the service providers in terms of the terms of reference and how they were appointed. There was a little bit issue in terms of how the service providers were appointed. Their terms of reference were not clear. When they started, the process was not clear, and the deliverables were not clear. We have implemented this. Before we started the process, we had a meeting to determine what kind of services are we going to outsource, what kind of services we will insource, and we then sought to appoint service providers as per the project plan that we have determined. The seventh relates to the planning phase, that they say it should be enough to allow service providers to do the work. If we need a deviation, we should do so. And this as well, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, was implemented. The eighth one relates to the anonymous tip-off line. When the rights allocation was done in 2013, there was a tip-off line, but it was not fully functional, one, and secondly, it only operated for 3 months. Now, the issue was that you cannot allocate without having an anonymous tip-off line that is running throughout and is assessed by an independent body. So this time around, we've implemented that. Sizwe Ntsaluba Kobodo was manning the anonymous tip-off line. It was operational from the time we started the rights allocation until now, and that thing was then implemented. And that there was a need for further and detailed investigations of the tip-off line received. This has been implemented, Chair. As I speak, we are in the process of appointing the forensic audit company that is going to take a couple of issues that were reported through the anonymous tip-off line to do the verification and the forensic audit of those issues so that they can be dealt with. That we should do the verification of all 2013 FREP application forms. And as you're saying, Honorable Chair, when this portfolio committee started, the challenge was that the FREP 2013 applications were still having a bulk of applicants that were still complaining that their information was not captured correctly. For instance, somebody is captured as a male instead of a female. And if you are female, then you would have received a preference if there is an issue that has to do that. And some people's ID numbers were not captured correctly. So there was a request that we should immediately clean that data. That was done. We appointed a team that did the cleaning of the data and the verification of the data. The 12th relates to the intensive verification that was needed to be done before you allocate the scores to applicants. And that's what I'm talking to about, because before you do the allocation, you should have verified that Sipogas is Sipogas, she is female, this is her ID number. And how we did this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, over and above because the challenge we saw that was that you receive a pile of applications when you deal with this process, and if you use people to capture the information, they work very long hours. Sometimes they get very tired. So sometimes people do these errors not because they are intentional, but because it's a tedious process. So what we did this time around, we scanned the information so that we make sure that the scanners translate the information as captured and as written by the applicants to the system, so that we avoided that human beings themselves punch in the data, then they make such mistakes. So we have implemented this issue. The 13th relates to the steering committee members that needed to be officially appointed for 3 years in advance. This challenge was relating to the fact that what the report was saying is that on the 11th hour of the expiration of the rights, the department is not ready to allocate fishing rights. So then they said, you need to look 3 years before the rights expire so that you start the process as early as possible. And we are glad that the portfolio committee has asked us to present what we are doing in preparation for the rights that are expiring in 2020. And we have started the process. So that too has been implemented. The last one on that slide relates to the issue around the action plan and time frames of the meetings, recordings, and the records. This issue was emanating from the fact that there were allegations that maybe two people, one person sits behind the computer, feel I don't like you, I like you, let me give you the right, you don't get a right, and there were no proper recordings of how did we arrive in the decisions that we arrived at. And I'm happy to report that we have implemented this. What we have done in this allocation, we have separated the teams. So each sector, fishery sector, would have its own allocation team. And then each allocation team would have two scientists, two fisheries managers, two people from compliance, one person who's got a legal background, and a person from PricewaterhouseCoopers. So there is no allocation that has been done by two individuals or three individuals. It has been done by these allocation teams. And as I say, PricewaterhouseCoopers has been sitting throughout all of them. There was a secretariat that was appointed that was minuting everything. There were live recordings of all of the meetings. Those are in tapes. They are there to make sure that we run the process as transparent and we can be able to account and tell the nation how did we arrive at the decisions that we have arrived at. And these have been implemented, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The 15th one relates to the process of granting exemptions under the interim relief, that we needed to review that because there were criticism how the process was done, other people that were unsuccessful. We have been able to deal with this issue, Honorable Chair, because we thought that it was not possible to deal with interim relief if we are not taking away interim relief so that we implement the small-scale fisheries policy so that you kill the interim relief. And we are at that stage that we have done this part. The 16th related to the delegated authority, whether it should provide detailed reasons of the decision. And as I've said, the issue was that in the previous allocations in 2013, there was some evidence that there was not enough reasons given to the people. And I can confirm, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that in this rights allocation, there was what we produced called GPR, General Published Reasons. This is a document that we have produced after every allocation. And each section is clearly tabulating who were the people sitting in the meeting taking the decision, how did they arrive in the decision, how were people scored, because the application form had 7 sections, but the 6 sections were only the scoring. The 7th one was a non-scoring because it was simply asking, are you a South African or not? So you simply answer yes or no. So the 7th section was not a scoring section. So you had 6 sections you scored. So we would sit and allocate scores. And as I say, this team of people, the scientists, the managers, compliance people, the legal people, and then we would describe in the general published reason, which we would publish every time we announce the results. It will clearly outline how we reached at the result, how the scores were determined, how many people did the scores. And we would also even indicate the methodology. There would be a big chapter that talks to the methodology, how we did the allocation. So this was implemented.
seventh one related to the decision between the apportionment of new entrants and existing entrants, so that you between the small scale, we did consultations, several consultations, in terms of how we were intending to do the splits between a commercial and the small scale cooperatives. The 18th one relates to the decision of not excluding people without vessels, and I think Minister has indicated this issue a number of times, whereby you find that people who don't have vessels, they get excluded in the process, and it impedes on the dream of transforming these sectors, because obviously people who are predominantly black that do not have, or previously disadvantaged individuals that had not have access to quotas and have no access to finance, are not going to be owning rights. And this was implemented, Chair. In this allocation, we did not exclude people who did not have vessels, but we asked them to go and talk to those who have vessels so that they have agreements, catch agreements with those people. The 19th related to score sheets, whether we should not include exclusionary criteria and only applicants who have not been excluded should be scored. This was also implemented, Chairperson, because what we did, before we do the scoring, we would first sift candidates who are either have not submitted or lodged their applications properly. Maybe you did not sign, the Commissioner of Oath did not sign, you did not attach your ID. Those would have material defects, so those are put aside. Whether you have not disclosed certain things, or there were applicants who did not disclose that they were transgressors, they had either caught more fish than they were allocated or things like that, and they were found wanting within the MRLA, if those people did not disclose those things, so they were excluded. And then we then scored everybody else that had to be scored. The 20th relates to the delegated authority, if we should provide detailed reasons for the selection of criteria and weighting in respect of each fishery. This as well, Chair, I've already indicated to, because it talks to the GPR I'm talking about, that stipulates the methodology, how we followed the methodology. The number 21 on this slide talks whether there should be a need for deviation from criteria contained in the fisheries policy as the criteria informed by a particular thing, although it is permissible to the delegated authority to depart from policy. All deviations, it says, must be justified and properly recorded. And as I've indicated, Chair, we have got recordings of where we thought we would deviate, and Johan de Waal, we sought counsel with him. He provided up to about 5 opinions of those, and we can be able to provide them. The drafting of the letters that tell people you are successful or you are not successful, there was an issue about timing, that we need to have sufficient time to set aside so that we check that they are done properly and the reasons are given thoroughly, and we have implemented that. The next issue relates to the time, again, that we've got to, or sorry, it's a repetition, that one. So we go to 24, that the letters should be delivered to an outsourced courier company. Now, when you receive a right or you don't receive a right, you receive this letter. So Harris said we should outsource this. We could not implement this, Honorable Chair members, mainly because we found it was going to be too costly if we were going to outsource this function. So what we did, the letters were delivered to the DAF local offices so that applicants individually were contacted so that they can come collect their letters there. This emanated from the fact that other people claimed they did not receive their letters at all. So then that's the reason why this suggestion that we must courier them to the people. The 25th one I have already talked to, because there was no application fee, there was also no grant of right of fee that would be paid by those who were successful. And the recommendation was that those that were successful in 2013 must pay a grant of right of fee. We have started receiving those monies. We wrote letters to all the people that were successful in the 2013 allocation, and we hence requested them to make the payments. Not all of them have paid, but the bulk of them have already paid those money. And 26, for the next allocation, a grant of right fee should be determined well in advance. We did that, and as I've indicated, there was a consultation between our minister and the Minister of Finance.
of how to determine the amount. So the amounts that were charged for application fee were not subsidized by the department. We did a proper calculation what it would take for us to administer the process from beginning to start, and that is how the fee was then determined and was endorsed by the Minister of Finance. 27 relates to the database. Application forms and documents attached to each application should be made available to applicants as a matter of urgency. This talked to the allocations of 2013 because people wanted to do appeals, so they did not know how other applicants were scored. So we opened up the fourth floor at Fisheries and we brought in all the applications there, and we were opening it up for everybody to come and view the application forms so that they can be able to do their own appeals. So that too was implemented. 28, legal advice should be sought on documents that may be considered confidential, such as marketing, business plans, and financial performance. This relates to the applicant's information itself. This as well, Chair, was implemented. As I say, the forensic audit company is going to be dealing with those issues, because some people apply and they claim to have certain things that we are not able to verify at the time. So those are the things that we're going to be dealing with through that forensic audit company. The last one there relates to the verification of applicants' information that should be conducted as soon as possible. And as I indicated, that is the issue that we have put in place. The Amangbasadi recommendations, quickly going through them, Chair, and as you've indicated, because there were these findings on Harrison's report. Then Minister Zogwana then appointed, when he came, he had to deal with these new allocations. And there was a need to say, how do we implement these recommendations? Is the department ready to do so? And these were the recommendations that the Amangbasadi came about with, that the minister must extend the fishing rights that were expiring in 2015. And this was a challenge that the new administration comes in and the rights are expiring in 2 months. And basically, because the process requires at least 1.5 years of preparation, so it was then recommended that minister should exempt to extend those fishing rights so that those that were already fishing can continue fishing while the department was preparing for allocation. That was implemented. We did a media statement to extend and to exempt those people so that they can continue fishing, so that while we prepare to allocate. The next relates to the general policy and sector-specific policies that they needed to be reviewed and aligned with the MRLA. This was done, Chair, we did these consultations, and now we thought that for the next allocation of 2020, it is perhaps another time, as you have indicated, how radical is these next allocations of 2020 is going to be. And we are saying we see a need and opportunity to perhaps review the general policy of the allocation of fishing rights so that we ensure that we look at this issue of transformation and representation, meaningful participation in the fishery as much as possible. The third one related to Minister forming the Fisheries Transformation Council, and that ties up to that. The Fisheries Transformation Council is legislated, is in the Marine Living Resources Act, Section 5, and it explains exactly what this Fisheries Transformation Council should do, what the powers are. It gets appointed by the minister. We are in the process of appointing that. Minister has approved, and we are in the process of making a public announcement and asking the public to nominate 5 individuals that should serve in this Fisheries Transformation Council. The fourth relates to the development of application forms that should be simultaneous with the development of policies. We implemented that, as I've indicated, that we would look at the policy and then say what question must the application form have. That has been implemented. The sixth relating that minister should consult the Minister of Finance before determining the application fees. Again, that, as I've said, that has been implemented. The sixth recommendation talks to the consultative advisory forum. And the council advisory forum basically deals with the allocation or the determination of the TAC and TAM. Because there was an issue from Harrison that minister should determine the TAC, but then the council of opinion came back to say, no, minister cannot do that. And we thought that because this is clearly provided for in the Act, that if you have got this council advisory forum, one of their functions could actually be the determination of the TAC and TAE. This as well is in progress. Minister has signed on this, and we are going to be making calls as well for the five persons that have to serve in this advisory forum. The seventh related that Minister needed to create an independent appeals team. That was done, and I think we have reported several times to the Portfolio Committee as we were dealing and cleaning the appeals of REP 2013. In these rights allocation as well, we've got a separate team that deals with the appeals that assist Minister in the appeals decisions. The eighth one relates to the establishment of REP steering committees to oversee the process, and as I've indicated, we have different steering committees per fisheries, and it constitutes a number of people, as I've indicated, that minister should determine the levels of transformation. The levels of transformation were determined, but they were later revised after public consultations. And I think this is the issue that, Chair, perhaps needs much more deliberations, but as we go to 2020, do we determine, how do we do the determination of the percentages of the transformation? Do you talk percentage of transformation, or do you talk meaningful participation? Because there are companies who are very smart to say we are 60% black owned, but when you zoom into the blackness of 60%, you find that it is non-existent. So this is an issue that really needs serious discussion as we prepare for the rights allocation for 2020. The tenth one related to DAF to adopt a proposed FREP process flow. There was a process flow that was suggested by Emang Basadi, who should deal with what, at what point, and we have followed that and implemented that. And we had made a presentation to this portfolio committee where we showed the diagrams of those process flows, and we have exactly followed the process. The 11th relates to the creation of capacity, because this is a challenge, and as I've indicated, this is a burden, an administrative burden, allocating fishing. It's like running an election process, because you have got 32 centers throughout the whole country. You must consult on policies, you must take in the inputs of the people, you must finalize, you must gazette, you must distribute forms, you must receive. It's a very, very burdensome process. And what Emang Basadi was saying, looking at our capacity fisheries, the recommendation was that we need to have additional capacity. That was implemented, Honorable Chair. We created contract posts, 40 contract posts that were assisting us in the allocations, and we are hoping we will do the same going forward in this one. The acquisition of a robust information technology system to assist the process, that was the suggestion, and that's the system that we acquired. As I've indicated, nobody was physically capturing the information from the forms. We simply translated the information as was filled by the applicant to the system, so we procured that process. DataWorld provided us this. It was an open tender. We opened it up for open tender, and DataWorld got the tender. The 13th one, relating to the need of an adequate FREP budget, because we saw that running this process and putting PricewaterCoopers and doing all the processes will need money. Hence, it was the motivation of where do we set the application fees at so that they can cover the process, and that was done. And the adequate and equipped FREP office space at fourth floor at the fisheries branch, the half of the site, we literally transformed it into a FREP center, and basically also for security reasons, so that there's nobody that lives with the form or somebody copies some information. So people in that center, when you get in, everybody leaves their phones at the door. We register who comes in, and if you work on any documents, we make sure that you leave the documents there. And this was a suggestion so that you avoid people tampering with some information at one point or the other. The 15th related to the various recommendations on the small-scale fisheries policy that we needed to run concurrently the process of allocation of small-scale with the rights allocation. We have implemented this, Chair, but we have not been completely successful in doing the allocations exactly at the time that we are doing the allocations for the commercial sector. The last one related to the way forward with the Lionfish Association, that we must sort a court agreement to do an out-of-court agreement with SACLA. That was done, and it was implemented. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
small-scale fishery focus on issues that needed follow-ups years experience, 18. I'm trying to check my notes from the small fishery. Focus on those issues that small-scale fishery people have raised, because we had this presentation before, and there was a meeting with the scale fisheries, which they raised the issues on the policies and the allocation. Focus on those issues.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning to the Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Good morning to the Honourable Minister and the Honourable Deputy Minister, Acting DG, colleagues. My name is Hassan Ganjobeni. I will be taking you through some interventions from the Department with respect to the implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy. I will try my best to also be more specific and report on the issues that were raised. There seem to be a challenge with respect to what I'm having before me, Honorable Chair, and what is projected on the screen. I'm not too sure.
I'm on your presentation. We don't want the presentation that we had before.
Okay, Chairperson. Let me start with the contract. There was a request from the committee. I must upfront state it, Honorable Chair. This is not what I have before me. The presentation was on the progress made so far in the previous calendar year 2016 and in the 2017, as well as future work. So I'm going to struggle, but I would ask to go to another presentation that I have, not in this computer, that was the representations from the department with respect to the grievances that were raised. So if that is acceptable to Chair.
The progress report includes those issues that they've raised by the small fisher, the small fishing communities, which we have met. If you remember, there was the meeting with the fishing communities here as a portfolio committee. They've raised specific issues. One on the 10-15 years experience, I can't remember the I'm trying to check my notes. They phrase the issues of Professor, can you help me on this?
Yes.
So that we would become specific, because, and then as you test the progress, you respond on those issues.
Yeah, that's it. Let me hand over to the DDG, and if you don't mind, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think, Chair, just to emphasize, I think we had some misunderstanding somehow, because we had prepared a presentation to talk overall of the small scale. But I think in the interest of time, let me just zoom in into the issues, because I recall them very well, and if the honorable members could assist of those that I have left out in the response. The first issue, Honorable Chair, was relating to the issue of the empty basket. The basket is not empty. And I think we did report to the portfolio committee in the last presentation that I think Asanda is trying to find now.
And we had made this presentation that the basket will never be full. And I think it's important we start that as a point of departure. We are dealing with a depletable natural resource. Even if we were to take all the fish from the commercial sector and give it to small scale, it will never be enough, basically for two reasons. The first reason is that you are not wanting to destabilize the commercial sector while you want to implement the small scale. So you need to find a balance so that there must be that, because it's an economy of its on its own, it's creating jobs on its own, at the same time while you are giving to small scale. So the balance needs to be there. You are not simply eradicating the other sector to create the other sector. That's one. The second one is the fact that communities grow and expand. Today we have got about 30,000 fishers in all of these fishing communities. Next year we may have 35,000. Well, people are moving, and you don't control the human movement. So these communities are forever going to be growing constantly. So, and this is a depletable resource, so you can never say you have got enough. And that is why we were saying, we want to say the basket is half full, because it is not going to be full. And Honorable Chair, we had made a presentation of the species that are in the basket, and I will quickly run through them because I can remember them in my head. The first one,
Chair,
is...
Can I just come in quickly?
Okay.
Which document are we talking to? Or if we are reporting on the basis of records, is this an informal meeting or a formal meeting of the committee? Because in a formal meeting of a committee, you must get a formal presentation on issues raised. Unless, if Chair, you will say to us that the communication between us and the department was not clear, and as a result, the department is not ready with this presentation. Because we have a copy here which we are not talking to. We are talking to issues which we must now all of us record. That's the problem I have.
No, you are right. This is the understanding of us saying progress report to include those issues that we have met with small fishery scale and the issues that pertinent issues that they have appreciated the policy, but there were pertinent issues that were raised in that discussion. One of the participations, 10 years, the contract being valid for 3 years when you give commercial farmers 15 years, involvement in fishery resource management, because scientists just give information without them being involved, and training and skills development for themselves, and the incentives that is available in DTI for them to access assistance and the issue of the basket. So we expected your progress report, including responding to those issues that are pertinent for small-scale fishery people, for them to succeed, because it will not be very helpful if you are implementing the scale fisheries, but the same people are not happy about the policy that is in place, and they've requested that these are the issues that need to be taken on board. And we then said you must go and talk to them, and then as we get progress on the implementation of small-scale fisheries, we will get the feedback including these issues. So I expected not to have difficulty in terms of saying, when we were discussing, as we implemented the policy, this is the issue that was raised by small-scale fisheries, and this is how we are dealing with it. So those are the issues that we need from yourself. I don't see any difficulty in terms of the presentation, unless if I thought the progress would include those issues. Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson. I can make the statement of the fact that this policy was not determined by the department, point number one. We are responding to a court judgment of 2007. Therefore, some of the conditions that are laid out were not of our own creation. And that speaks to the issues of the the requirement that one should have so many years of experience and the rest. And let us check if they could have been maybe in the communication between the department and your office, a stage where the department was not clear as to what is needed. I agree with Honorable Mallory that we cannot maybe base our report on that, but I think it may only explain that there may have been a lack of clarity, because the report that the department has brought does not necessarily, I mean, deal with those issues. Not that there is no report around those. I think it explains the fact that there may have been such that the people, the report that was required is not what the department produced. Not that they are not first. I agree. If we give a report not based on the document, the question will be, has the committee been given that documentation before that it can engage on? And that is where I think we may not be able to give the report if in that fashion. But the report is there, I'm sure, as to how many people I know for that already in Northern Cape processes have gone on. People who have been appointed have been informed. Already we have determined who are qualifying. The other key thing I think we need to look at is that there's this thing I think has been pertaining to say that people who may not have acquired, as I said, that when we deal with this report, we should avoid dealing with appeals, because those appeals are being handled in areas where people have made appeals. But I think that the issue for that, the report that the committee is looking for is not, I mean, the one that may have been prepared, should not be seen as a sign of disrespecting the committee. But it's just that I see it explains that maybe the communication thereof was not properly done. And I would like to apologize for that, if that is the situation.
No, Minister, the issue of the communication not done doesn't arise. If we are saying give us the progress report on small-scale fisheries, the implementation of small-scale fisheries, and we have given you time to look at these issues that were raised by the small-scale fisheries, how do you come here without those issues and you then say it is a report? What progress are you giving us if you don't have those issues? Because the issues of small-scale fisheries, we have called them here, and after a general cry, and we have called them here, they've identified their issues. We said, go back and look at this issue, engage them, and come back to us and report on the issues. I think we'll not have the progress of implementation of small-scale fisheries if those issues are not included. What progress is that, Minister? So if there is no that progress, I think we can defer the matter on the small-scale fisheries and go to the ocean economy, Minister.
I would again apologize to the committee profusely, because they have been, the committee presented in May the progress report on allocation of small-scale fisheries. But we were with the report at our disposal at present is a report on what we have done in terms of allocations. It may not touch to the issues that you are saying, Chairperson, are important in dealing with particular queries that people have raised, queries to the experience of 7 years. Hence, I said, we're implementing a report that was not of our own creation. We're responding to a court order, and some of the principles and policies were in that court order. But I would plea that we be allowed to withdraw this report, Chairperson, and we do that humbly. It's not on the basis that we are disregarding the committee and deal with the other report, but we'll make that report applicable as soon as possible or available to the committee members. We don't want to present something that is not based on a document that is in opposition.
That the issue must be taken back and then we get the full report because the progress for me will include all the issues that were raised by the small scale fisheries. So can Honourable State?
Chairperson, yes, I don't think we have another choice because we can't discuss something that we don't have. It's just basically amazing. I'm sitting here almost like a fish with my mouth open on dry land because we've been dealing with this and the members here, unfortunately, you know, were not part of the previous committee. This started way back. I think it's 7-8 years now. And to hear today that we don't have a report, well, all I can say is that's why we don't have a report, because this is the way it's going there.
So can we allow the department to present on the Operation Pakisa and in the next meeting where we'll be sitting here, we'll get the report on small implementation of small scale fisheries and even those issues that fisheries, they were saying the policy is good, but there is this element that if not attended to, it will be like we're just given a carrot without anything. So those issues are very important for this committee to get feedback on them. Can we go into the operation practice?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will take you through, it's very comprehensive, so I'll try and skip most of the background information. Honourable Chair, with the assumption that we are all familiar, I just need some help with the projection. I will just take the... the first slide that is projected just highlights the departments that are actually participating in the oceans economy broadly, and it also lists some of the labs that were agreed to in the oceans economy, and these are some of the aspirations, short term, medium term, and long term, and I will just go quickly. You will pick up aquaculture in terms of transformation, 15%, that is last year, 26% transformation target 2019, and then going to 2033, the target is to achieve or to have achieved 50%, that is specifically in the aquaculture. The next slide is talking to the economic growth, with 2019 being the target here, and I think we are now halfway since we started in 2014. The first row there, first column, is giving the jobs, the projections, and that is marine, but I will skip that in the second one to focus on aquaculture, the third column. The jobs at the start was 2,227. The projected jobs by 2019 was the 15,000 jobs will have been created. That is now the entire value chain. In terms of GDP, from at the time was 0.7 billion rands per annum, the total production, to 3 billion rands. And the production was somewhere just under 4,000 tons. The target was to achieve 20,000 tons by year 2019. This is now globally in the context of oceans economy. The impact, which then was going to have been measured from 2014, is that government will have unlocked investments, or actually currently government has unlocked investments amounting to approximately 24.5 billion rands. And about 6,000 and a half jobs have been created in the various sectors. But now moving to the aquaculture sector, which was a standalone lab at the Oceans Economy Lab in Durban. This is the picture or the trends that in a way triggered the move to add aquaculture on the list of prioritized sectors in the oceans environment, where you look at the aquaculture in relation to capture fisheries, there was more room. As we know in South Africa, how it is situated, there is potential, but it was not being unlocked. Hence, there was this decision to add it. Not to say wild fisheries was not important, but in terms of beneficiation and exploitation, there was more room with respect to aquaculture, with the offshore not being used so far. We're only having land-based aquaculture. These are the aspirations now for aquaculture. I've talked to those in terms of the number of jobs and the aspirations up to 2019, the GDP contribution, as well as the total production. So I won't spend more time. And this is just the identified development areas or developmental gaps. And then with proposed interventions, they were based on this picture as it was articulated by the various stakeholders that were part of the process in the lab. These are now the initiatives, and the initiative one was in the form of catalyst projects, initially 24, now currently is 36. I will talk to that later on, Honorable Chair. The second one was legislative reform. I will speak to that as well. There is an aquaculture development bill, interdepartmental authorizations committee to address now the issue of streamlining, the issue of processing of applications. Once again, Honorable Chair, I'm experiencing the same challenge. I don't seem to be in control of what is being projected. I must apologize for that. Through you, Honorable Chair, I'll ask the Honorable Members to use the physical copies so that I don't leave them behind. I don't know how it happened, but thanks to the member who has brought that to my attention. If you permit, please proceed, Honorable Chair, otherwise I have to ask for assistance. I have lost control of the projected information.
This is the slide. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm on slide 9. Yes. So the third one is the Interdepartmental Authorizations Committee that has been established. I will talk to it. Aquaculture Development Fund, Capacity Building, Coordinated Industry-Wide Marketing Efforts, globally recognized monitoring and certification systems, and government preferential procurement. And moving to slide 10, which is page 10 of the physical copies. This is now an overview. I'll try to be quick in terms of now the initiatives I've alluded to. I'm back. Okay, thank you very much. Let me just continue. You will see the phase one so that I can just explain it. It means implementation of initiatives in 6 to 12 months. Then phase two will mean implementation between 12 months and 24 months. And then phase three will be talking to implementation of initiatives in 2 to 4 years. So as it is indicated there, and you will see the kind of initiatives I've actually alluded to in the previous slide. Now, I will take you through the project, which is Initiative 1 of the 8 initiatives. And the total number of projects is currently 36 projects. 26 of those are producing animals. And you will see the investments to date, just the figures there, from the aquaculture projects was, as at end 2016, 690 million rands, of which government committed 227 million rand. There is still actually a collection of and verification of the data. And the production, as you can see, it's 26 of 36. And from the PAKISA projects alone, we have now up to end 2016, 3,500 tons, which is 1 ton is equivalent to 1,000 kilograms. Okay. Then the transformation profile so far in terms of SMMEs is around 15 of them. And then cooperatives, so far it's one, and then BBBE is just less than four. That is the average. Moving to page 12, is the performance indicators, that is key performance indicators. And in terms of jobs, you will recall we had some aspirations from 2,227 to 15,000 by 2019. So far as at end 2016, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, it's 1,806 jobs. Then I'll break it down. Sample of total jobs on 23 farms in 2015 amounted to 1,550. And then new jobs created in 2016 is 171. And the additional existing jobs from three new projects added up to 85. So you will see the profile in terms of now females is 29%, 47% of jobs is the youth, and then African black make 60% of that figure, and then 29% the colored, and then disabilities, no employees with disabilities reported yet, and veterans not registered or no registered veterans were reported as well. And you can see the breakdown at the bottom there in terms of 2015 and 16 and the global and the percentage in relation to the lab figures. Now I'm going to move to page 13, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. This one is just one of those unforeseen events. It's a reality, and especially in light of climate change as well. So we have experienced a red tide beginning of the calendar year in one of our hotspots in terms of fish farming, specifically with bivalves in the Amarnas. As you will see there, from January to March 2017, the estimation of the damage there in terms of production was 220 tons, and that has been lost, which if you want to now estimate in terms of now GDP is 100 million rand. However, the farms are recovering, and there's also steps taken to ensure that no jobs would be lost because of that unfortunate natural event. The impact of red tides, Honorable Chair, has severely impacted the production chain and the annual production of the sector for the next 2 to 4 years, and will impact the targets as we have decided at the lab. However, the department is collaborating and improving on existing warning or early warning systems with the Department of Environmental Affairs. And we do have our scientists who are involved, and there is a tool that is being developed to also assist as an early warning system. We will also develop more hatcheries in other provinces because this is also important in terms of attempting to reduce the risk on the sector. Stepping out of that one, Honorable Chair, to page 14. Now this is just the progress, and I will just quickly go to page 15. Initiative 1, now we're talking about the implementation now of the catalyst projects. As I've stated, currently we are sitting at 36 projects, 26 of those producing animals. Originally, 5 of the original 24 projects conceptualized during the lab have been removed and placed on business opportunities. And new projects, that is 17, new projects were accepted in the lab in 2014, and like I said, 26 out of a total of 36 are producing or are producing aquatic animals. It's also important to state that while projects are expanding and progressing, many projects are experiencing various challenges around funding, water leases, land leases, and authorization. But fortunately, there are initiatives that seek to address, amongst other things, those challenges, so I will be reporting on the progress with respect to such initiatives as well. On the next page, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, page 16, this is just the location, to just get a picture, location as well as species of 24 original aquaculture projects, because now we're talking about a total of 36, but the original 24, this is just the map that tells you what is where in terms of aquaculture activities. As you will see, it's all over the coast,
four coastal provinces, starting on the west coast, that is Northern Cape, down the west coast, around the south coast, up to Richards Bay. And this is the picture, but also note there are projects that were removed from this original 24 projects on Initiative 1, and these are actually listed and placed onto business opportunities. This is Fenderstop Catfish, ADZ, Fenderstop Algoa Bay Yellowtail, Oceanwise East London IDZ, as well as Southern Atlantic. Now I'll go to slide 17, which is now the same picture, but now for the additional new aquaculture projects, as well as the species. And then you will also now have inland provinces, for example, Gauteng. We have there Fal, Tilapia, and we also have Graaff-Reinet, which is more inland. It's your freshwater fish there. And it's also tilapia. Then around the coast up to Plainsy, where Real Useful Investments is busy there. And then you will note then the ones on the left side that are listed or printed in red font is your SMMEs. I will skip slide 18. It's just a picture of this. The workers are busy there with the preparing of the product that has been harvested. Going to slide 19. Now, this is a collaboration and partnership on slide 19 between the Department of Science and Technology and Stellenbosch University, the Kopp Farm in Richards Bay. I will just touch on the highlights. So far, the 22 tons of first market size Dusky Kopp have been harvested. That was around June, July 2017. And the size there ranged from 1.1 kilogram to 1.6 kilograms. And the food safety criteria that was tested, it was found to be meeting those set minimum requirements. Market testing and analysis was undertaken on the harvested product. Moving now to slide 20. It's now a different project, African Olive Trading. This one opened its processing facility in Felsif on the 1st of March 2017. This processing plant created 47 new jobs. If you break it down, it would be 40 factory workers and 7 managers. It's also a BEE level 1 project and has also added 5 additional rafts on the farm that is now to increase production. Going to slide 21. The highlights now going to the Eastern Cape. There is Hamburg Community Project there. I think the Portfolio Committee had the opportunity to visit it during an oversight visit to the province. This particular project is a revitalization and it employs 23 people with the capacity to produce 20 tons per annum. That is Dusky Kopp, which is indigenous finfish, and has already sold its first harvest to the Cape Town fish market at the V&A waterfront here in Cape Town. And then the next project is what we call now an alternative livelihood, and the Abalone Ranching Project in the Eastern Cape. I think this is the province that is more advanced in terms of the piloting of this aquaculture activity. 1.8 million spat, that is baby abalone, has been seeded along 20 kilometers of the coast, that is in the Eastern Cape. There are 3 concession areas there. This represented a potential economic value of 26 million to South Africa. It's just the pictures of the seeding exercise by the right holder. Going to the next slide, Honorable Chair, on page slide 22. This is now another project highlight. This one is the Molapong Ocean Trout project that is actually around Saldanha. Normally, trout, they grow it or farm it using fresh water. So it's kind of experimenting. And so far, the first ocean trout and salmon project has 50,000 fish in the cages there and plans to grow the fish to between 2 and 3 kilograms each by the end of this calendar year. We also have Saldanha Bay oysters. They're one of the Pagesa projects that has recently been approved as an exporter to both mainland China as well as Taiwan. Going to the next slide, Honorable Chair, slide 23. Now, this is initiative 2. This one is on legislative reform, and the key strategic deliverable, or one of the key strategic deliverable there is the Aquaculture Development Bill. This bill was signed off by the NEDLAC in September 2017. The process was took longer than originally envisaged, Honorable Chair, but we are happy to report that finally we have managed to get a thumbs up from the NEDLAC. The bill now is due to be presented at Cabinet in early 2018, but it must first go to the Department EXCO, as well as to the DG cluster en route to Cabinet. And the another project, that one is a partnership between the Department of Collaboration between DAF and DIA, with a technical partner as the CSIR Strategic Environmental Assessment. Here we are looking for suitable aquaculture development areas, and we have had these screened already and have been reviewed by key stakeholders through consultative workshops. This started late last year, I think about a year ago. And once the project is completed, the areas deemed suitable for aquaculture development will require limited or no further environmental studies, thus encouraging investment, boosting investor confidence, because the problem we had was the turnaround time for EIAs with no guarantees for success. So that was affecting the appetite of investors. Moving on to the norms and standards for abalone, these were gazetted in February 2016, but will most likely be incorporated within the strategic environmental assessment process. There are challenges, Honorable Chair, and as stipulated, just to save time, I won't go through them. I would like to move on to the next slide, slide 24. This is just a picture. Initial area screened for further investigation for aquaculture development. You can see there, and both inland and along the coast. So these are the areas that further work must happen, and consulting with stakeholders and key government agencies. Moving on to the next slide, slide 25, Honorable Chair, Initiative 3. This one is what we call IAC, Interdepartmental Authorizations Committee. This committee is made up of various member departments, DAF, Public Works, Environmental Affairs, Rural Development and Land Reform, Water and Sanitation, Public Enterprise, particularly the subsidiary there, Transnet, as well as Mineral Resources. This was established in 2015, September, so almost a year after the launch of Operation Pagesa, and this committee has achieved the following. A final report has been received on the mapping of business processes, where we were assisted by GTEC, pertaining to aquaculture authorizations required by various departments so that we can see interdependencies and also help in terms of now improving turnaround time. And this was presented and then finalized end of March this year. Access to land, so far 7 of 8 initially approved leases have been signed off. The department with the Public Works met on the 24th of March 2017 to discuss the 6 additional leases still outstanding for over a year, and this has been escalated already. Follow-up meeting scheduled for this month has taken place. Access to sea space, 140 hectares has been made available to 10 projects in Saldanha Bay, of which 8 are long-term leases for 15 years, and 2 are short-term leases, that is 5 years. So 6 long-term and 2 short-term leases have been signed by both parties, that is now the farmer, as well as the landlord. Another 7 leases was advertised by the TNPA on the 30th of March this year, but yet to be finalized. So this must also be understood in the context of the multitude of activities that are happening in that harbour. It's a very busy harbour, so we see this as a significant milestone achievement to secure long-term leases that used to be short-term 3 to 5 years. Moving on to the next slide, Honourable Chair, slide 26. Now this focus is now on the Saldanha Bay Aquaculture Development Zone. There was an EIA that was commissioned by the department. And the final basic assessment report has been submitted to the Department of Environmental Affairs, which is the competent authority for consideration. This was done last month, Honourable Chair. And potential benefits are listed there in terms of jobs as well as revenue that we expect will be generated. And you can see figures with respect to, or that are projected with respect to, reduction of unemployment. And so this is just a visual, just to get a picture. And I will then move on to the next slide, Honourable Chair. Slide 27, that talks to Initiative 4. This initiative is on the establishment of a globally recognized monitoring and certification system. The department and the national regulatory regulator for compulsory specifications, I must apologize for the typo there, NRCS for short, there's a service level agreement that we signed through the Department of Trade and Industry, which is the mother department to NRCS, to undertake independent food sampling. And this was signed and is being implemented. They are also a recognized competent authority for certification of fish products destined for local as well as overseas markets. The European Union Residues and Public Health Audit did audit the aquaculture sector in February of this year, and various interventions were identified during the visit, which may ultimately lead to South Africa being able to apply to be registered to export abalone as well as finfish to the EU. Moving on to the next slide, Honourable Chair, slide 28, Initiative 5 of 8 initiatives. Aquaculture Development Fund, this was one of the enablers that was identified as a challenge at the lab. The Aquaculture Development Fund Working Group is made up of the following key institutions, that is DFIs and departments, and they are listed there. And then the final report on the Aquaculture Development Fund model and mechanism was received from GTEC at the end of March this year, and now we're in process of creating an MOC, that is Memorandum of Cooperation, between the relevant departments and the implementing agents for the recommendations. Feasibility studies were finalized on marine finfish, oysters, mussels, and also the feasibility studies are underway for tilapia, trout, abalone, sea urchin, catfish, freshwater ornamentals, marron, crayfish, and aquatic systems. Moving on, Honourable Chair, to slide 29 on Initiative 5, that touches, or is a continuation of the ADF. In terms of investment promotions, a first round of investment readiness consultations were held in Saldanha, or with Saldanha Bay Operational Pakisa Projects with Westgro, which is the Western Cape Trade and Investment Agency, from the 23rd to the 24th of February 2017. And implementation in other provinces will follow. It was noted that many projects require assistance with detailed and audited business plans, and this assistance is being supplied through SEDA, a Small Enterprise Development Agency. Projects requiring investment have been presented and profiled at investment conferences nationally and internationally. And the delivery unit, that is now the aquaculture delivery unit, hosted the Thailand Board of Investment Delegation at Amatikulu in KwaZulu-Natal during their investment opportunities survey here in South Africa. And they surveyed the aquaculture development zone on the 12th of July, 2017. Moving on to the next slide, Honourable Chair, and Initiative 6 on capacity and skills development. A skills needs analysis assessment of the sector is currently underway to inform further intervention and skills requirements. The draft report was received for review in September 2017. It is funded by AgriSETA and National Skills Fund from the Department of Higher Education and Training, through SAIMI, which is South African International Maritime Institute. However, in order to address the discuss aquatic veterinarian skills and services available in South Africa. The department and the Stirling University, they have signed an agreement for training of aquatic vets and aquaculture specialists. And so far, five veterinarians began training from September 2017. They will be there for a period of a year. And lastly on this one, the Gariep Aquaculture, or the Gariep Dam Aquaculture Training Center was officially handed over to South Africa in June 2017 and conducted training for around 385 farmers and students, 534 visitors or people who were touring this facility, as well as 25 interns, and 16 of those from January to March of the current calendar year. Moving on to slide 31, Honorable Chair, Initiative 7, coordination for industry-wide marketing efforts. New markets have been explored and received interest from Iran in terms of tilapia, China, Taiwan for farmed oysters, Europe for finfish and abalone, as well as there is product development, and you will see the pictures there. This one is catfish bouvos by Karoo Catch, which is already available at Spa Supermarket. There are challenges or delays that we have experienced, one due to the limitation in terms of capacity by the industry to drive the marketing initiatives as was planned in the lab. Moving on now to, okay, continuing to, with the Initiative 7, and on slide 32, issue of communication and awareness. A year two review publication in aquaculture photo book have been published to raise awareness on the progress in the second year of implementation and showcasing the operations of 13 farms. Also to note, Honorable Chair, the first international conference and exposition of the World Aquaculture Society was to be held on the African continent at the Cape Town International Convention Center was successfully held from the 26th of June to the 30th of June this year. And the conference was organized or was co-organized by WAS and the Aquaculture Association of Southern Africa, as well as the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. This conference attracted an entirely new pan-African participation to the international aquaculture community, with around 1,297 of the delegates originating from the 33 African countries. We had 87 exhibitors, 489 presentations, and 215 posters from 87 countries, Honorable Chair. Moving to the next slide, Honorable Chair, slide 33, Initiative 8, that of preferential procurement of aquaculture product. Interest has been expressed for aquaculture products from the Free State Economic Development Agency, and feasibility studies further illustrated the importance of preferential procurement opportunities that need to be investigated. There are key recommendations of feasibility reports which include the need to explore government procurement for Dusky Corp, to undertake international market assessments for the same species, and invest in research to reduce production costs, again for Dusky Corp. Also need to engage with local and international feed producers to reduce costs and improve quality. Also need to align institutional support and incentives for aquaculture, and we need to investigate centralized hatchery for salmon and oyster production, also increase lease durations to secure investment, and establish and open further international markets, especially for shellfish. That brings me to the end of the presentation. Honorable Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, that was the presentation. Can I see the hands that wants to speak on the presentation? Because it will determine the allocation of time, honorable members. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Honorable Sten, let's start with five questions. Honorable Mandel, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson, and again, I just want to raise my dissatisfaction with the fact that we're not dealing with a small-scale fishery. I was just reminding myself that while we were in the Northwest, there were unrest in the Western Cape, exactly because of that scenario. And we are sitting here today and there's no report. I really find it unacceptable. Chairperson, I also not sure how do we disassociate the Imang Basari report that we got today and then the small-scale fisheries, because as far as I understand it, it became, we had that report exactly because of what was going wrong in the small-scale fisheries. Chair, can I be protected? The DDG is rolling her eyes at me. I'm really trying my best to try and help to make this situation better, because we cannot have people outside protesting, burning things down because of a chaotic situation, and when we try and deal with it, we can't deal with it. I'm also just as frustrated. I'm next time going to Toy with you. Call me. No, Chair.
Ask questions. I've given you the opportunity to ask questions. Ignore.
Let me just breathe. It's an 8-year struggle that I'm struggling here. Chair, I want to find out. I haven't heard a word on the officials that were implicated in the Imang Basari report. Are they still there? That's all that I'm going to ask about Imang Basari, because I don't think we're going to move any further on that. Then Chairperson, the DDG spoke about the depletable natural resources, and I think that is also why it is taking so long to get the process finalized. I want to find out if the minister is taking information from the scientific committee into consideration when we are discussing all this, the half-empty basket that we have now heard today. The basket is half-empty, not full, it's half-empty. So when decisions are taken, what consideration is the minister taking, and who is the last person that's taking decisions on the TAC? Then on this oceans economy, which I'm very glad that it sounds that there's progress, and we'll do some oversight again to see if the paper and what is happening on the ground is actually the same thing. Chairperson, I want to ask questions about the slide 31 on the challenges. My concern is on this one, the delay. Industry has limited capacity to drive the marketing initiative as was planned in the lab, and I think that is the crux of the matter. If the industry cannot assist, we are trying to, you know, get something on the going that is not going to take place. I want to find out on the markets, tilapia for Iran. Where are we farming with tilapia? Because I know that the Orange River Harib Dam thing, we can't fish with tilapia. I went past there the other day, and I saw some of the people working there, and I'm very happy to see that students are there and training, but I'm not sure what are they training on, because we can't fish with tilapia there. So what are we fishing with, and where are we training them on, and where are we fishing with tilapia? That's all that I would like to ask for now. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, I've got only two questions. There are the one on page 11 regarding in terms of transformation. I just want to check, because there's only one cooperative that has been managed. So I want to check, therefore, what could be the challenges, you know, that you have only one cooperative, you know, that you manage to transform. Then again on page 12, it is said now there's no report for the disabled people that have been employed. So no report is yet. So I just want to check, perhaps there might be these employees with disabilities, or perhaps is it because there's no report, or they are not reported, they are there. I want to check on that to get clarity on that. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the presenter talked about sustainable utilization and sustaining livelihoods. Now, I would like to know, has a study been done to determine an allocation which is economically viable and sustainable to feed people? I mean, if I understand the DDG right at the last meeting, she said, 350 tons of rock lobster will be allocated to small scale. About 30,000 people would be in the small scale,
and that would translate to about 20 kilos each of rock lobster. Now, 800 people struggle to make a good living from it. How is 30,000 people going to make a living out of it? I don't understand the economics of that. Have a study been done to see, you know, you can't get the hopes up of a lot of people and then you fail them. You give them the chappy, but you only give them the wrapper. You don't give them the chewing gum inside. That doesn't help too much. And then, you know, you talk about the Minister of Fire. You should consult with the Minister of Fire for the fee. Why did you encourage a lot of people or most communities to apply for rights? I mean, there are lots of exclusionary limitations, conditions in people older than 65. They cannot apply, or they were encouraged to apply. Their money was taken, but then at the time when these exclusionary measures were set, they were not considered for anything. And then there was the split. If the people knew only 10% or 20% of allocation was coming to them, they wouldn't all have spent their money. It seems like you extorted the money out of the people. It does seem like that, because you didn't tell them all the, you didn't give them all the information. Then you got their hopes up that they would get quotas, and they paid. It seems like you were robbing the poor. Now you said that you had to get to a point where the process would be paid for by the applicants. Now, I would like to know, how much money did come in? How much, was there a profit? Did you make a profit, or did you use all the money? And if there was a profit, are you paying the people back that money? Well, I mean, it is only fair to ask that. And then I would like to know what has happened to the petition that was handed here in front of Parliament by the fishermen to this committee. I would like to find out what happened to that, and were those issues addressed, and were those fishermen informed about it. And then also we talk about the public participation, which should be accurate or adequate. Now, I've been to a couple of these public participation meetings with the department, and to me they were just like an information meeting. You go there, you think you're going to get a chance to air your view, but then an official comes up and he tells you this and this and this is going to happen, and these are the rules, and this is their public participation done. And then another thing is all these applicants, they put their email addresses and contact details on the application form. Now, I would think if I'm a department and I'm going to have an influence on specifically these people's lives, I would invite them to those type of meetings, all of them. Send them an email or let them know by telephone, by SMS, that there is a meeting. And instead you advertise it in a newspaper, which most people don't even see. And then you get 10 or 20 people at the meeting, and then they decide for everybody what is going to happen, or they give inputs. And so this is not proper public participation, according to me. Public participation to me would be you ask the people's opinion, you take it into consideration, and then you include it in what you are going to do. And I don't think that this is happening. I want to also know what happened to those two alleged corrupt officials. That's me. Thank you.
Honorable Madela.
Thank you very much, Chair. I thought Chair would intervene because I think Minister have requested that the report that was tabled be withdrawn, and the anticipation and expectation is that certainly, I'm talking about a report, the verbal one that deals with these issues that have been asked, that we would address that at another meeting, Chair. My question has been in a manner asked, Chair. The aqua culture sector, Chair, one would want to appeal, Honourable Minister, that we begin to look at specifically placing and spacing ventures in that sector to such an extent that it's located where the most vulnerable people are that are being affected directly. I know it's a highly capital intensive process, Chair, and especially the poorest of the poor do not have readily access to financial markets, Chair, but I think there must be some bias. One, if one looks at the overburg, most of those ventures there are commercial driven and they are owned by the previously advantaged communities, Chair. On page, I think it is page 8, there indeed is a recognition that PDIs only make less than 10% of the sector, Chair, and this statement reflects to relates to the aquaculture sector, and it's a big problem that we 24 years in our democracy still talk about less than 10% of the previously disadvantaged individual, Chair. So there needs to be there. Chair, I would want to venture and assume that on page 12 when we speak about disabilities, there's no employees with disabilities reported, that the effect is that there are no one. There's none, Chair, which indeed, to my mind, is a violation of Employment Equity Act, you know. So certainly those things need to be addressed, Chair. But one, these are employees, Chair. One would want to see that previously disadvantaged people, black people, Chair, and when I say black, I mean African, colored, and Indian, Chair, that they must own these entities. They must be the majority shareholders in these entities, especially those ones that are funded highly, Honorable Minister, by government. You know, I can again look at entities within the Overberg, and one could see the patterns of government providing funding to those entities, but those entities are not owned by black people, Chair. So in actual fact, in many ways, intensify the disparities that exist in the sector by doing this. We are not closing the gap, and it's indeed a problem, Chair. I just wanted to raise it. Thank you very much.
Okay, the slide 17 on the where the species are located on aquaculture, which adds to the question of Honorable Mandela. It's mainly commercial, we've not included the previously disadvantaged communities. And how do you address issues of, because you see there is a problem in South Africa where people see Africans or blacks in general, that the only thing that suits them is to be workers. And that notion must be removed. We cannot have a situation where Africans or black people are being seen as only workers, not the owners. We have to change that pattern. And I'm very worried about the slide that doesn't include the inland provinces and where they don't have a coastal area. You expected that there will be aquaculture in those areas, except the Gauteng. Gauteng is the only province, but it's not. It's still new again, which is a province problem. Minister, on the total allowance, the total allowance allocation or allowance that is determined by scientists, and it has been contested by small scale fisheries, which they are saying, how are you involving them? Which is something that they are saying, that we must get that report, because it's very important to this committee, because they believe that this thing is used to exclude them. how do we make them to participate and for them to be part of the decision in agreeing with the outcome of the research. investigations that are existing in terms of dealing with the corruption allegations in fishery, how many are they and how far are they? And adding to what Honorable Mandela is saying, the percentage in terms of previously disadvantaged on the allocation of 15-16 allocation. I see that your sentiment, you have withdrawn, or I didn't understand properly, that you had to refer back because there was a general cry. I just want to understand the allocation which for 15-16, in terms of the percentage, how many have been included, the previously disadvantaged communities. And you said that, again, there was an indication that people who did not have vessels were not being accommodated in getting rights. As you said, they must, because I'm very worried for any government to leave that loose and that previously disadvantaged must go and negotiate for themselves, which might end up being the rights for the sake of human rights. You know, in construction, you give a previously disadvantaged a tender. It does not have a machine, it does not have anything. The rise of cement goes up and all those things. And the intervention that I thought was speaking of is the intervention that makes previously disadvantaged people to participate and be supported without hindrance. So I'm not getting it. Because if you are saying you are leaving them to negotiate with those that are having vessels, what if they use that to deal with the issues of reduction of rights? To take all the money from those people, who's going to monitor that? And the last thing is on the the skills development, which we appreciate that you are training those shortage skills that in Fisher. DM used to say there's one doctor in fish. So now at least they are vets that have been trained. But is 5 enough, or we don't have enough money to invest for more? And let me give you that you respond and then you come. Okay.
Sorry, Chair, just one short thing that I forgot. Is it possible to include? Is it on?
Yeah.
Do we include the small scale fishing people in the oceans economy discussions? And are they forming part maybe of some of these aquaculture projects? So that we try and see if we can't use some of the small-scale fishing people that's currently struggling in the aquaculture and draw them in there. And, do we specifically focus on them or not?
Minister Newton.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm sure some of the questions will be dealt with by the committee. I think the fact that this process of aquaculture is quite, the cost to set one is quite huge. But I agree, where there is state funding, we should be able to put up people who would not be able to have money to set one up, because transformation should be driving our programs. I take that as part. And the fact that in areas where there are poverty-stricken people, because fish farming is supposed to supplement the depleted natural resources, and therefore you have to do it for two reasons: to create employment, as well as to make sure that people participate in these processes. I think some of the issues, and I want just to go to one area that Chairperson have raised, the issue of the allocation of rights to people who have no access to the vessels. I think the explanation that was given was to the fact that the recommendation that was made by Harrison and his team was that it should be the minister who decides on that. And the view was that was given as a legal opinion was that it cannot be the minister who does that. It is rather be a court that decides whether we continue or not. And in the picture of that, we continued to say that people, if they don't have access to a vessel or they don't own a vessel, should negotiate with a particular vessel. Yes, I agree, Chairperson, that approach, if left untransformed, may lead in the fact that people will continue to acquire allocations and not be able to use those to transform them. Hence, we have been saying that we need to amend the Act such that we can allow foreign vessels, neighboring countries that have been able to break, that has been able to do so by allowing foreign vessels, so that if you have got, let's say, 40% quota on a particular fish piece, you can go to another company and say, we will work with you, this is our quota, can we work together? And through that process, you can transform. What hinders the issue of vessels is the expense of acquiring one. You can't expect a guy who recently got a quota to be able to buy a vessel at the prices that they are sold for. But you can do transformation. But what is hindering currently is that in the commercial sector, there is no competition. It is limited to vessels that are owned by local companies. And they use that as a reason. And so we had a discussion, I'm sure the member of the Fishing SA can agree with me that we raise this, that maybe we need to look at relooking at that exclusiveness, that only local companies can be in that area. But transformation is key, and we agree. So I agree with you that if we are to succeed in this process, we need not to lock people to negotiating, because you can, money is not made necessarily in catching fish. Money is made more in other activities, like processing and marketing. And if you happen, therefore, to have your fish or your quota being fished by somebody else, you may not be able to be in those areas. And I will leave other questions to the officials to answer, as I think that they can. But I want to say that we must not take that each and every aquaculture situation or plant is the same everywhere. I've been to the Harib Dam aquaculture. I found there they have got a program, because that aquaculture was built by the Chinese government in partnership with our government. People are receiving fingerlings, and they're giving without pay, and that has increased the participation of black people in that area. That is the kind of structure I'm sure we need in future.
Thank you, Minister. We will share, Honourable Chair, with my colleagues the responses. Let me begin with the first issues that were raised by Honourable Stein. The issue of the unrest, the protests that have been happening, these issues were not linked to rights allocation. If you will recall the papers, the newspaper articles and everything, the issue was sparked by a meeting that was held by the department and the stakeholders, where the department presented to the stakeholders the possibility of a reduction
in the total allowable catch of the West Coast rock lobster by 59%. So the meeting discussed this proposal, that the scientific recommendation is proposing a 59% reduction for the fishing season that starts on the 1st of November. This is what has been on the papers, and that's what the issue was. It was not with regards to the allocation. So I think it's important that I clarify this part. Now, the issue of the TAC, and you recall this started in Hangbeck in particular, and there was a mixture of issues that were being raised in the Hangbeck in itself. It was not just relating to fisheries issues. It was housing issues. It was other issues as well. However, there were issues that expressed themselves in form of the issue of the proposed cuts of the West Coast rock lobster. The issue around the scientific information and TAC, I think I need to clarify this issue again. And the question was asked, I will link the issue in terms of whether does Minister follow the scientific recommendation or not. I think we need to also clarify this issue. Minister does not set the total allowable catch. TAC is not determined by Minister. Is determined by the delegated authority, who in this case happens to be myself. Now, in the process of determining the TAC, you get the scientific recommendation, and I need to again emphasize, Honorable Chen, Honorable Members, scientific recommendation remains a recommendation. That is why it is called recommendation. It is a recommendation. It is not an obligation that the final decision must follow the recommendation. It's important we emphasize this. However, science plays a component in the management of the resource, because that's why we spend money to go and do stock assessment to check where the stock is. Then the recommendation comes to say the stock is under pressure, either reduce or you maintain. When you come to the issue of the West Coast rock lobster in particular, Honorable Chair, I think I need to emphasize this issue that what we are saying is that the reduction of TAC, that is the recommendation, does not solve the problem. The problem is people who harvest the resource illegally. They steal the resource. So we are saying it is not going to help to focus on the reduction. You may reduce it. But if you cannot monitor those people that are fishing, they may take that TAC even if you had reduced it. So that's why the department has been drumming the narrative that we need to control and cap and manage the people who harvest. And also to nullify this perception that it is poacher communities that steal the West Coast rock lobster. West Coast rock lobster has made the elite fishing companies, commercial fishing companies, rich. An example is Benjis. Arnold Benjis was a legal right holder here in Hout Bay who over-harvested the lobster for 18 years, over-harvesting it for more than 180% of his allocation. In 1 year only, in 1997, he makes a profit of $100 million in 1 year only. He became a multi-billionaire. And if we are going to still focusing as if, again, poaching, we're talking the communities and stuff like that. So the issue here is that science in its own is not in isolation of all the other things that need to happen. The issue around I'll leave the aquaculture issues, Asana, to yourself maybe, and quickly, Chair, address the issue of the basket and the fishermen. The issue of the basket, as we have indicated, Chair, to say it will never be enough. That is why we are looking at what we call alternative livelihoods. So that we say, and that's why we're doing this as a basket, to tie that with the question that Honorable Van Dalen asked. If you're looking at lobster alone, it will never be enough for more than 30,000 fishers. That is correct. That is why the small scale is focusing on the areas. There's a map of the country there. So if you look at the map of South Africa, there are species that are only found in a particular part of the coast. So a basket of species is going to comprise various species that occur within that vicinity where they stay. So you cannot look at West Coast rock lobster and you say, will it be enough for 30,000 fishers for all the coastline? Because there's no West Coast rock lobster when you are at the south point of the coast going this way. The West Coast rock lobster starts in Port Nolloth and it ends somewhere just before you get to the Eastern Cape. And it is not only going to be the rock lobster only in the basket. It's going to be the lobster. It's going to be squid. It's going to be seaweed. It's going to be different types of lionfish. It is going to be various other species that occur there. So the issue that this fish must cover everybody, that's why we're saying it's a natural resource, it's depletable, it will never be enough for everybody. So we're looking at alternative livelihoods. And yes, Honorable Stein, in the aquaculture projects, we are also including small-scale fishing cooperatives. We have already identified small-scale fishing cooperatives in the Northern Cape and around Basel-Siach is one example, for instance, where the quota for harvesting of the seaweed has gone to the community vis-a-vis the commercial company that is there. So these are the projects that we are doing to augment what the activities are going to be. We are looking at ecotourism, for instance. What do fishers within small cooperatives do when they are not fishing? It's off fishing season. How do they take tourists, for instance, put them life vests, get them an experience and an expedition to go out fishing? How do you look at other activities that can supplement that so that we say we extend it over and above? We have done a study of the activities that can happen. From boat building, which is not too highly capitalized boat building, but just your small-scale fiberglass boats that can be done within these cooperatives, fixing and mending of those boats, repairing of the nets, preparing of the baits, because some of the people are not necessarily going to be going fishing, but you can have a number of people preparing the bait that is going to be used. So that's the whole value chain of activities that we are looking at. Community cooperatives, so that we look beyond one, just the allocation itself, and also look at the fish farming itself. There's a project, unfortunately we could not talk about it, we can talk. There's a project that is we are doing with it as the department together with Rhodes University that is called reseeding. We are reseeding the abalone, for instance, to the wild, where we have now seeded almost to over 1 million units of the abalone back to the wild environment. And these are some of the projects that we want to look at to say and experiment whether what are other species that we can do with that while we look at the whole value chain of the species. The other issue, Honorable Members, we are looking at as a department is what do you do with the fish? In South Africa, fish is taken out of the water and perhaps mostly by big companies. It is sent out of the country, literally. But there's something you can do with the skin of the fish. There's something you can do with the scales of the fish. The intestines of the fish, for instance, you can turn them into liquid fertilizer. Other countries are doing that. The bones of the fish, you can dry them and make them a powder, and they are using them for noodles in other countries. So there's a whole issue around the value chain that can be done with the fish, and we are exploring possibilities even within communities. The skin of the skipjack, for instance, you can do bags from it and shoes from it. And these are the things that we want to encourage. Hence, we're saying it is going to go beyond just that issue. In terms of the issue that relates to the rights allocation and the income, I was just double-checking now with the colleague in the office, the Director of Finance. She has confirmed that the total amount we have made from the fees is 7 million, and the total amount we have spent on the right allocation is 11,900,000. So we have actually made a loss instead of making a profit. And the issue is that
we have had extended periods whereby when we were supposed to close for applications, there were requests that we extend. So the time has taken even much more. So we have expensed much more than what we have collected. And I think, again, I want to explain this thing. Rights allocation process is a competitive process. It's competitive. You apply, you may not get. It's competitive. We have not encouraged any communities to apply. We have not encouraged people to apply. We have made public announcements that those that are interested, they must come. But we have never actively encouraged or inactively encouraged anybody to apply. You apply like you apply to a university. You are not guaranteed the space. You pay for the application, but you may not get the space, and you may get the space. And I can say there are those that were successful, and there are those that were not successful. What did we do with the petitions that were handed to Parliament and subsequent protests that have happened? The petitions that were handed to us, we have responded to the two that were handed in Parliament. We responded in writing to those. We can provide proof of those responses. There has been subsequent protests that have been led by a group that has now formed itself to be the collective. The collective has met with the minister on a Sunday of last month. I can't recall the date. And on a following Monday, minister asked us to sit with the collective as the department. We have had four subsequent meetings with the collective after that. And it was agreed in the meetings that the things that we were talking about, we were not going to give them verbal responses. We have made a record of decisions of what those things were, but basically the demands were that we must cancel rights allocation and not allocate the lobster, and we've indicated it is not possible to do so. This is an administrative legal process that is not possible to be done in that way. We have continued the engagement with them. We are still continuing the engagement. With regards to the issue of public participation meetings that were not done thoroughly, I cannot deny this, or I cannot say yes to this. I can just say PricewaterCoopers, as I indicate, was employed to audit the process, and I think it is PricewaterCoopers perhaps that even the portfolio committee could extend an invitation to, as the company that was auditing the process, to perhaps speak to those issues. But PricewaterCoopers, the ones that were auditing the process, they never raised such issues with ourselves. But as I say, maybe they could raise those if they were to be asked. I think for now, Chair, maybe let me end it there and hand over to my colleague.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And thanks to the Minister and the DDG for providing responses to the other questions from the honourable members. I'll just touch on some of the ones I've noted that were not responded to. Industry has limited capacity that flows from the last presentation, limited capacity for marketing initiatives. I'll say there are interventions already to work with the industry to address whatever it is that has been identified as developmental challenges. One of those was the establishment of an aquaculture value chain roundtable that is co-chaired by the department as well as the industry, chair of the Association of South Africa, that is ongoing within that aquaculture value chain roundtable. We have different work streams. Then marketing is one of those. There is also labor. And that's not all. And we also, as the department, convene every 2 years a conference. I would say it's a regional conference. We do also have some international guests. The aquaculture conference, the last episode of that was in Polokwane. So that is where, again, we meet with academia, with the industry, and the young and aspiring farmers. Some of them are being sponsored by the department to attend, including the last one was one of or two of the workers at the Hambeck, a project that I included in my presentation. So there is that existing. We did not have it this year because we're having the World Aquaculture Society Conference here in Cape Town, which was again what do you call it, organized by the department, working again with the association. So there is that existing relationship to work, and the DTI, who are members of the Aquaculture Value Chain Roundtable, from time to time they also sponsor industry players to go and exhibit their product in the international exhibition meetings. Where are we farming tilapia? We do farm tilapia in Gauteng, Free State, as well as Western Cape. We have pipeline projects to farm it again in Mpumalanga and the Northwest. So it's an ongoing thing. I've noted the issue of transformation and the challenges. There, again, this is work in progress, honorable member. What the department is doing, having realized that this sector is capital intensive, which is prohibitively expensive for some, especially HDIs, it's very technical, so that as far back as 2008, it was still the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, a study was commissioned to look at suitable sites. The idea was to have what we call today aquaculture development zones. The idea there was to take away from the aspiring aquaculture who would have financial problems, the responsibility to do an EIA, that is the environmental impact assessment, which is very expensive, takes time, with no guarantees for success. So that is what the department has been doing even when it became DAF. That work continued. There are frustrations here and there. Some of the areas identified later on were picked up. We could not proceed. One of those was Silverstrom Strand along the west coast. The other one is Alcoa Bay in PE. We have met with some great resistance there, but there are successful stories. Koloha, there is an ADZ there or in the making. It's 26 hectares for land-based farming with abalone, seaweed, as well as finfish. That record of decision is in the hands of the Koloha by Sea Communal Property Association, which is the local communities of very rural areas east of Kai River. So there is that kind of work. Hamburg, the project I also touched on, that is growing with a capacity of 20 tons per annum, Dusky Cove, that one is owned by the trust that was set up in the Hamburg area. It was a project that was revitalized, the department, through the Public Works Working for Fisheries program, bought it from the previous farmer and then revitalized and is now diversifying it. There is oyster already that is being farmed in the raft there. Now there is expansion to include Dusky Cove. So that is another project. There is employment. There is also greater beneficiation through ownership by the community. There is Kamdebu projects as well. The aim, again, is to assist HDIs to actually also find it realizable to work, I mean, to end and meaningfully participate in the sector. Lastly, we used to have what we called pro bono aquaculture, which was targeted again at HDIs, but as we're busy formulating that, working with the Department of Environmental Affairs, then there was Operation Pakisa. So that pro bono aquaculture, which was targeting HDIs, then changed now to the strategic environmental assessment, which is the one that I reported to now, to look at those areas where we could develop aquaculture. So that is, again, the work that maybe in the time to come will be reporting at this portfolio committee. Quickly, Honorable Chair, going to, okay, the DDGs. Okay, breaks. I'm just checking my notes, and I think most of the stuff does not include inland provinces. The Honorable Chair raised that, I think, on slide 17. She raised the point that the slide is almost silent on inland provinces, with the exception of Gauteng. The idea about Operation Pakisa was done on a, what you call it, voluntary basis, kind of. Beginning, Honorable Chair, of the Operation Pakisa, it was more ocean-based, that is aquaculture, now marine aquaculture. But very early in the lab, it was raised that why limit it to marine aquaculture? So it was open during the lab, long before the Honorable President launched it in October 2014, to include freshwater. And then we had projects from Van der Kloof dams and in other inland places. But then some of the projects, five of those, are the ones that, Honorable Chair, I said, they were since removed. Because
once people, they were given a 3-foot plan that they needed to complete, so that once they are in, our delivery unit will do the monitoring and keep them accountable to their own set targets, because we had to report to the presidency. So some of those people, even though they completed the 3-foot plan, which was detailing what and when by whom was going to be done, then they could not actually deliver on what they committed to do. So they ended up being taken out to the business projects. So that is why you don't see more. And if you look at those five, some are in Ventersdorp, so they fall within the landlocked provinces. But it's actually only voluntary, and we decided to keep it open. Hence, we said initially we started with 24 projects, then now we're talking about 36. So the door is still open, but people are encouraged, as and when they are ready, they are assisted to complete the 3-foot plan. So that number might change, Honorable Chair, going to 2019. Skills development, 5 vets enough? Do you have enough money for more? The challenge here, we don't have institutions currently in the country that train vets in the field of aquatic animals. Honorable Chair, the vets that we have managed to get to go and attend the training at the Stellenbosch University, they are graduates from the University of Pretoria, and so far they do not have modules on the fish aspect of aquatic animal health. So we have that challenge so far, and some of them do get employment, and some of them we managed to get them to on this young professional program to absorb them. So unfortunately, there is funding challenges where we cannot take as much as we want to take, because we must absorb them against some existing post that could be vacant. So those are the limitations, but we are working on that, Honorable Chair, to the extent that we also have some technicians, those that are not doctors but have done aquatic animal health, as well as in our intake for what you call the interns, we also do recruit those who have qualifications, especially as a technician, so that we can beef up the capacity. I'm not too sure, but according to the questions I've highlighted, I've exhausted them. But thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. There are questions that have been not responded to. Let's give it to DDG and Minister Yokitela.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. There's a question. You talked the issue. Minister responded to the issue of exclusion on the vessel issue, but you asked a question: how do we ensure that the catch agreement contracts themselves are not? I must admit, this is the most difficult part, Honorable Chair, because there's a thin line between us as the department dictating what business transaction must happen between business entities. However, we have realized that we cannot distance ourselves too much into it. We need to monitor what happens because, for instance, you would find that under a catch agreement, somebody black is being given a 2 rands per kilogram of their fish, for instance, and you find that that fish sells maybe at 25 rands per kilogram. So those are some of the issues that we are trying to address, to look at. One way that we have done is to perhaps do some negotiations ourselves in terms of bringing vessels that could be able to give them a better price. And one way of doing that, I think Minister had alluded to that previously during the portfolio committee engagement, our working relations with Namibia, for instance, and companies that are fishing in Namibia, because a vessel that is in Namibia can easily come to South Africa, and if it can fish at a better price for those. And I think we need to be bold enough as government to take those decisions and to do so, because it cannot be that people continue to be subjected to prices that are far way below. The second thing that we have done, Honorable Chairperson, was to report these incidences of this monopoly and this collusion to the Competitions Commission. And I cannot indicate for now where the process is, but the Competitions Commission is going to be making a big announcement very soon on these issues.
they are looking and they're doing thorough investigations on these issues, because we felt that if you do not break this really monopolized vertical occupation in the fishing sector, it's very going to be difficult for historically disadvantaged people to meaningfully participate in the process. So we've approached the Competitions Commission, and they are fully on board. And as I say, they will be making an announcement fairly soon with regards to some of their findings in this issue. You have asked, Honourable Chair, the portion and or the apportionment in terms of the percentage of the TAC. You are asking a very, very important question, because we have noticed that previously when rights are allocated, you would find that it is reported that there is 10 black people, but you find that the 10 black people are sharing 1% of the total allowable catch, and 99% is shared by two companies. So what we were doing in this allocation, we tried to do a calculation of an estimate of at least the minimum TAC that should be given to historically disadvantaged persons. I'll make a classical example, Honourable Chair. On the Hague Inshore Trawl, for instance, we made it a point that the new black entrants would not receive less than 3% of the TAC, less than 3%. Previously, the black people had 0.01% of the TAC. In this allocation we've done, we've taken it to 3%. And if you will recall, Honourable Chair, part of the court papers of the company that had taken the department to court on the Hague Inshore Trawl, they were claiming that we have given too much fish to the new entrants, which happen to be black people. So the issue is that we are making strides in not only looking at the number of black people that are there, but also at the meaningful quantum allocation of those black people. Unfortunately now, Honourable Chair, I don't have all the figures in for all of the sectors. I just happen to remember the Hague Inshore Trawl because it was before the court, it was part of a case that was driven, but we are going to do a list of all the sectors that were allocated, what the previous percentage allocation was for black people, and what in this allocation the apportionment is for a previously disadvantaged person. Thank you very much.
Investigation, people who were mentioned the Harrison report and members, Harrison report, they're still in the department. If they're still in the department, how far is the process? I've raised the investigation that you have in the section. How many cases do you have of alleged corruption?
Thank you. No, I wanted to sit with my principals in the front, but I think there was occupancy, full occupancy in terms of the bench. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Two questions that were asked. The first one in terms of the investigations that are currently ensuing in the department. And secondly, in terms of the issues raised in the Harrison report and also in M. Ambassadi. Let me start with one that is quite easy. There is currently an investigation that involves officials of the department. We have engaged with an independent group that is currently finalizing on the investigations with a view that we will take disciplinary action in terms of the colleagues who are involved in terms of that investigation, or of the allegations, sorry about that. On the M. Ambassadi and the Harrison reports, the two officials that were fingered in the report, I wouldn't want to sound to be giving explanations in terms of reasons why it's not happening. But I would like to paraphrase this to indicate that there has been a few changes in terms of leadership within the fisheries branch, and each and every of those leadership positions that have been taken has not taken any position in terms of this. I had a meeting with Minister and the DDG responsible for fisheries that we need to follow up, because we not need to be seen as a department that does not follow up in terms of those. There's a process that will be unfolding and reporting to Parliament in terms of how far we'll take that process without fear or favor of those who are fingered in the investigation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any follow-up question, Honorable Malloy, Honorable James, so this should be the last 1 o'clock, unless members want to eat your own lunch, and there is no lunch provided.
Thank you, Chair. But it's not a follow-up, it's just a comment. Based on the last answers by the DG. And I would want to take you a little bit backward. But let me start with page 11 in particular, where you are talking about transformation. And if I read that page correctly, I assume that you are saying out of 26 projects that are operational, only 4 are BEE compliant. Is that what you are saying? Okay. Now, Chair, I'm worried about this aspect. It means we are not moving forward. We have been complaining that only 5 companies in the fishing industry are dominating. And those companies are predominantly white and so on. And we seem not to be moving forward. Even the report that we are getting today tells us that we are not moving forward. And it goes back to the Marine Living Resources Act, the 1998 Act. Now, you see, Emang Basadi report recommends that the minister must establish the Transformation Council, set up advisory forums, and so on and so forth. But those things are in the Act. Emang Basadi is not saying something that is not in the Act. Section 26 is very clear of the Act. And the report we are receiving today says to us that you are in the process. Adverts will go out and so on. This is 2017, and we are talking about the 1998 Act. What has been happening all these years, and so on? Because you see, these forums, including the council, they are very important. Those are the bodies that must advise the minister in terms of ensuring that we implement the Act. But those forums haven't been there, the council hasn't been there, and so on. It means somebody somewhere was sleeping. Now, the question, the answer to the question you raised about disciplinary action and so on and so forth, it tells you that somebody is sleeping again, because there's been changes and so on, and we'll act on these things. We might get the same report 10 years from now. So it therefore suggests on our minister that there need to be a movement in this department, because you can't sit with an act of 1998 in 2017 and you say you are still going to implement and so on. What have you been doing for the past more than 10 years, by the way? So I'm saying I'm worried about this thing. Somebody is sleeping, and somebody must wake up. Otherwise, we'll have to assist that person to wake up, because it seems that person is dreaming about nice things. That's why he's not willing to wake up. So we'll have to assist that person to wake up. Otherwise, we are in serious trouble. Thanks, Chair.
Jason?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. Sometimes, now, when you ask short questions, now, you don't get any response. So I'm trying not to have long questions, sir. Because I wanted to get carried on the issue of disabilities, employees with disabilities. I didn't get anything. So I'll begin to have long questions, sir. Thank you very much.
You must have a mission statement first. Yeah. Honorable Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson. We note the comments from different honorable members, and we acknowledge, but I can assure the committee that when we come back to report on the outcome of the processes the acting DG has mentioned in dealing with people who have been cited in the reports, that report will be clear. On the issue of the transmission committee, yes, there has been a delay, I agree, since the Basadi report up to now. But we have issued the gazette, and we are expecting to be in a process to appoint. I agree with the statement that we can only transform through those committees. But our approach has been that we need to get the industry to accept transformation. In all the meetings we have held with them is to say that we need to ensure that we achieve transformation through it. But of course, as government, we need to push for that to happen, and we have taken note of that. But on the issue of skills development, Chairperson, you have referred to, I think as a department we need to interact with provinces, because besides what the department is doing in training people, there are those people who are trained by departments. I remember two months ago, I was in China and I met three fish veterinarians, mostly on aquaculture. Two were from Limpopo and one was Free State, and I'm sure they are not limited to that. And I'm sure we just need to maybe talk to provinces to give us a list of the people who have been sent to training, so that we know what, because I think we need these skills so that that area can be leading. But with that, Chairperson, I'm sure we have taken note of the issues that need a follow-up so that we're able to achieve our goals. But one thing I think we need to agree on is that in the fishing industry, there has to be dialogue with all. There's one area I mentioned with the fishing associations, the issue of how do we count for what is called a bycatch. How do we manage it? Because there's one area that I think if our, of those species that are not allocated as per other allowances, and we said let them come up with a proposal so that we can add the available fish to different, especially to small scale farmers, sorry, fishers, so that fishing is viable and for everybody. And I think if we can all work towards fighting illegal fishing, both the commercial fishermen and communities, that's why I believe that giving fish to zonal areas, to local people, may be one form we can be looking at. But it cannot be argued, I agree with those who say, 27 years now, we have been free, but when you look, and I agree with the question asked, how do we promote our compliance with the use of making sure that even people who have got physical challenges or disabilities are participating? I have taken that question. We may not have answered, not lack of interest, but I'm sure it is more in agreement with the fact that it has not been factored in our work, and I'm sure we must work towards achieving that. Because they can work maybe in the co-ops that are part of the allocated fish species.
Disability.
I just answered the chairperson by saying that the reason we have not responded is that admittance to the fact that as we have put up these aquaculture farms, we have not put space for them. But I believe when we begin to allocate fish to co-ops where maybe even processing of the fish and marketing thereof, I think we need to focus, especially on the small scale, we need to focus on such people. There's no way we can disqualify their participation when the law is clear in doing that.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable Maloyi, you've put the question very nice. That's why it was easy for Minister to respond. If it was me, I was going to say, Minister, why did you sleep at your work with your team? So it was going to be very difficult, and fortunately, Minister, you have escaped that question, and Maloyi has put it very nice. And I think in the next meeting, we hope to see the progress. You know, Minister, let me tell you something that you don't know. As you negotiate, I encourage negotiation, but you must have time frames, because your people will not wait for this negotiation for 7 years when they are hungry. They will actually fight with you. So take decision and address those still complaining you'll address them as you have taken a decision. So if you entertain negotiations, that is endless. It will come back and fire on your face. And those people that you're negotiating with them, they will not be there to answer that with us who delayed the minister, because we're still negotiating. So it's very important that we cannot delay this matter. As we wrap up this meeting, you said you've noted all the issues. Next meeting, when we talk about the progress, we include those issues that are on gray areas for today's meeting. And thank you very much for coming, Minister. There is a meeting on the... This one I must announce so that you don't come not being prepared. On the 28th November, we are inviting you and your council, Charter Council on Forestry, and the company, because as we meet with communities, they are complaining about non-compliance. All of them, either you must have the meeting with them first and clarify the issues of the charter, why they are not meeting the charter transformation and all those things. When we come here, we need answers. So we'll not have an opportunity to take you back and wait for another meeting. So I just thought I must announce this one very clear, that communities are raising pertinent issues. And it's very painful to listen to those issues that are raised by our people. So 28th November, you must have yourself ready for that meeting. And we'll invite those companies to come and get their story, why they are not implementing the charter, which is the agreement with yourselves and them. And thank you very much, Minister, for coming, and your team. You are relieved. Honorable members were invited to the joint meeting tomorrow. We'll be looking at the drought relief funds that have been available for attending to drought in various provinces. The meeting is between ourselves and water and sanitation, which will be at Good Hope Chamber, 9:30 to 1:00 on Wednesday. So, Minister, you are destabilizing my meeting. Bye-bye. So, honorable members, you are invited to this meeting. Honorable Madam.
Chair, I just wish to tend an apology. I won't be able to do tomorrow because I have a Rural Development and Land Reform Portfolio Committee at the same time.
Okay, no, it's fine. Those that are available, let's join, because it doesn't help us to deal with drought relief alone when there are other portfolio committees are involved. So the meeting is very important to us, honorable members. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Yeah, they woke up.
I need your help. I'll pay you tomorrow.
I don't have money. I can quickly organize and I can. Where are you going?
Now I'm free now.
Can we go lunch if I can sign the 8249?
8249, eh? Okay, wait for me.